All right, Concert, are we all good to go? Right. Just Liam, as an announcement, just there, first of all.
Just chairman, introductory remarks. Members of the public should remain seated throughout the meeting and should not speak nor express an opinion. Everyone should ensure their mobile phones are either turned off or switched to silent. The use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I would remind all councillors of their obligations on the council's code of conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they may have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please indicate and declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the public vote.
Thanks very much for that, Liam. I have a couple of just things on apologies. First of all, any apologies that we don't already know? Happy enough for the ones that are recorded. Treasure Tinley. So by now, many of you may be well aware of the sudden and tragic passing of Niall Laverty on the 19th of September. Niall, of course, joined Newry Morning Down to the council as a casual leisure attendant in June 2018. During the summer of 2019, Niall also worked a seasonal summer scheme assistant play leader in Down Leisure Centre. He was a popular, outgoing young man whose personality and love of sport made him an instant hit to his colleagues and the children he supervised. Niall will be sadly missed by everyone who knew him, and our thoughts and prayers are with Niall's friends and colleagues, his entire family circle, and in particular his sister Colleen Morrison, who works as sports development officer in our council. And also we'd like to send our best wishes to Gareth Sharvin. Gareth is unwell at the moment. We hope he makes a full recovery. I think if our council maybe could show some kindness towards Gareth in the fullness of time. Oh, welcome. Andy's back, I believe, is he? Good man, Andy. You're very welcome back. Try and stay this time, will you? just one other thing, and it's a very important thing. The man on my right-hand side here, as this is Liam's last council meeting, it would be nice of me not to take the opportunity to thank him for his leadership and direction in the establishment of Newry, Mourne and Down District Council since 2014. Liam has worked in the public sector since 1980, an impressive 39 years of public service. He started his career with the NIHE as a housing management trainee in the southern region. As a trainee, he worked in Craigavon on the initial review of housing voids in the new city and prepared a report on how this could be acted. So the studying this year, he should finish his career in the public sector, having worked tirelessly in the development of a vision for the city of Newry. A vision which will see the regeneration here with new offices, homes, accommodation and a youth theatre and conference centre. Regeneration has always been at the core of Liam's career, and as a housing officer with Dungannon District Office, he assisted in the redevelopment of Divis Flats and Lower Falls. Change management and modernisation were talents he developed through his early career when, in 1981, as assistant manager for NIHE in Belfast, he undertook a business process review to rationalise land and property services in the housing sector, which enabled computerisation of these services. Liam returned closer to home in 1987 when he was seconded to DARD to lead an area-based strategy for rural development in the Greater South Armagh area, and he established the fourth Youth Action Office in Armagh and Down. In 2000, Liam was appointed Director of Development in Bamburgh District Council and established the District Peace and Partnership and Community Safety Partnership for the district after the establishment of the policing board. He was appointed CEO of Bamburgh District Council in April 2007, a position he held until he joined Newry Mourne Down District Council in 2014 as CEO, and I chaired the panel that actually interviewed him for that one. So, I just thought I'd mention that. In his time in Banbury Council, the F.B. McWilliams Centre, Solitude Park and Guildford Community Centre were built, and the upgrade of Trevor and Banbridge Town Hall and several other capital schemes were completed. Liam was instrumental in enabling the outlet retail centre, now the Boulevard, on the A1. Liam came to Newry-Moreland Down with a wealth of experience and knowledge and a deep commitment to the betterment of the district. He successfully amalgamated Newry-Moreland Down District Council and Down District Council, ensuring no break in service to our local residents and businesses. He has led the completion of Newry Leisure Centre, the development of Down Leisure Centre, a range of new play parks and upgrades to play parks, the establishment of the Community Plan Partnership, and the securing of our district within the Belfast Region City Deal. These are only some of the examples of his successes of this council under Liam's leadership since its establishment in 2015, and there are many more. I hope you'll join me in thanking Liam for his commitment, dedication and passion that he has shown to this council, and wish him a long and healthy and happy retirement. I have no doubt we will continue to work with Liam, albeit in a different way, in the coming years. His loyalty and dedication to the development of our district will, I'm not sure, end with his retirement. So best of luck for the future, Liam, and thanks very much.
Chairman, I suppose it's very humbling, and thank you for your words. I suppose I am retiring from local government. I just keep saying that there because I don't intend retiring totally. But from my perspective, it has been a pleasure working in the public sector. People know I did sociology at university in the late 1970s, when a lot of the concept in terms of public life and the importance of public life and the importance of public services and the importance of improving the lives of people you work for. And that commitment, I suppose, was engendered in me at that point in time. So I've always believed that public service is a calling that I wanted, that I desired, and I've loved every minute of. I should say I worked across a range of places. I worked in pretty rough times around Belfast in the early 1980s. And I worked in Dungannon with Traver Community when we were doing work in that area. But again, working with the more marginalised people in society and working with them has always been a big part of my commitment to public service. Chairman, you know, joining local government 2000 was an eye-opener for me from various ways, because I suppose, first of all, I realised the importance and the commitment of politicians to actually delivering, and how my commitment as a public servant for the previous 20 years could be enhanced by working in conjunction with local politicians, which I work with in Banbridge District Council and indeed with Newry-Moreland Down District Council. I must admit, I have loved every bit of it. People will know when they talk to me over the last few days, they keep saying, well, I suppose you're in the wind-up now, or you're winding down. I don't believe in winding down, because I don't believe you can wind down in this job. But what I will say is, I wouldn't wind down, because actually I love every minute of it. I love doing what I'm doing. And somebody says, why the hell are you leaving? But because you can wind. You need to get to a point where you need to know when's the time to go and when's the right time to move on and move into a particular area. I want to say I've enjoyed working with every politician. I respect you highly. I know you do a really rough job. You put yourself forward. You get a lot of kicks, and in terms of social media, is terrible now in terms of how it gives people abuse, anonymous abuse from keyword warriors, for people who dedicate their public life to doing good for people. And again, you know, I think that I commend everybody for that. I must admit, I've worked with loads of political parties and loads of political groups, and I can't say that I have ever found any political party that didn't treat me with respect, didn't want to work jointly with me, didn't want to help me make their own people better. And I want to thank everybody. I also want to say I want to thank the staff. I've worked with great staff in Banbridge District Council and in Newry-Moreland Down District Council. You can't do this job unless people pull with you and work with you. And I've never found staff that weren't able to come in when I said, I'm really stuck, I need a hand. But I've never been a member of staff who said they wouldn't help me. And I want to thank them for that. I'm not going away, as to say. I will be, as people will know, I'm a South Armagh person. So, sit good in councillors, may get ready for a lot of help. I know your weaknesses now. So, I will be pressing them buttons. But in all seriousness, you know, people will know me as a committed community activist. You know, unfortunately, I have family all stuck in this here, and between the arts and community activism, I still want to be involved. Still involved with Youth Action. I'm pretty passionate about working for young people and making lives better for young people and giving people a better opportunity moving forward. Currently in a very, very difficult landscape in terms of which we work both in school and a community. So there's not more I can say other than say a really big thank you to everybody for working along with me, and I will miss it. It seems strange, but I will miss it. And next Monday in November I'll be saying this: what the hell's going on in that council meeting? And I'll be downloading the tapes from the 2nd of November then to see what happens. But thank you.
Well done, man. Sorry, Pete.
Yeah, just when you said from all the parties coming and joining me on your words, Charlie, I thought I shouldn't let that opportunity go. And on behalf of the SDLP, Liam, and as I said, I'm our man as well, I want to thank you for all the work that you've done over the council. With the council over the last 5 years, I think even with Banbridge and Craigavon Council, we have replaced an acting chief executive, another good cross and defend man there as well. So I want to wish you well in your retirement. I think last week we discussed at length, you know, the positives over the last 5 years, and I really do believe that advocacy was your real strong point in this council. I think you really led from the front with that. And I want to wish you all the best in your acting career, because you're not too bad at doing that either.
Well, Liam, on behalf of my party at DUP, we want to wish you all the best for the future. And we've got to know you from 2014. And I have to say, any time we've called upon you for advice and that, you've always given us good, sound advice when we needed it and that. And you were very, very impartial. You had no favourites and that. And you... we really respected you, so we did. And I'll finish in this. Our new chief executive, I wish her well, but you have a hard act to follow, Marie, so you do. But all the best, Liam, for the future, and go and enjoy it with your family for a while before you take up something else.
David. Thank you, Chair. Liam, on behalf of the Ulster Unionist Party group, and could I also offer our best wishes to you as you leave this position. You've mentioned you're not retiring, so I think that's a good thing for everybody involved, that you're able to put your talents, you know, to use elsewhere, wherever that may take you. Certainly, I've enjoyed my time working with you over the last 5 years. I understand you took over the job at a very challenging but exciting time for local government as well, with all the changes that were happening. But certainly, those challenges were many because of the fact that it was such a large entity that you were taking over. But you took that job on very well, and you've left the council in very good shape. I certainly know my colleagues in Banbridge always had a great word for you, particularly Joan Bird. Joan wouldn't hear anything against you. And there's times I used to keep her going just to get a reaction out of her. But so certainly, you know, I know the day would be very, want me to wish you obviously very best wishes as you leave the council in the next month. But certainly hope you enjoy your time away from council, but you know, use your talents elsewhere.
Andy.
Thank you, Chair. I'm only just back, so I can't be anything I've said, you know. I know just from the Alliance, you know, thank you for your public service and all your help. And it's been a pleasure to work with you and alongside you. And you'll be sorely missed. And enjoy your retirement.
Thank you very much. Who am I missing?
Well, the Independents would like to echo those sentiments. And thank you very much for your service, Liam.
Just briefly, Chair, on behalf of Sinn Féin, we would like to wish you well as well, Liam. I've always found you a very progressive chief executive, a can-do person, not looking for excuses, not do stuff, but very willing to find a solution. I had a great relationship, as all of our team has had. You've treated all of us with great respect and helped all the councillors, and particularly new councillors coming into their role. But it treated all the parties right across the board with equality and respect, and I think that has to be recognised. So I wish you well for the future, Liam, to get a bit of free time and get a few holidays and stuff and get your head short. And as Delia said, while Liam's moving on, we have a very capable person in Marie Ward taking over. So we continue with Marie. But well done.
Thank you very much. Okay, happy enough to move on now. I'll go on to the Dun Declaration of Interest. It is the action sheet, item number 3, action sheet arising from the council meeting held on the 2nd of September. Just to turn for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposer and seconder?
Just refer to item ERP 078 2019, which is called in, which I'll be picking up later on, Chairman.
Right. Yes.
Chair, I'm happy to propose there. Just on the page 2 there, I raised about the housing field scrum scrumming till they say that they've updated me. Was it Paul? He said a few words to me after the meeting, so he was, and that was it. So maybe Michael can give me a proper update. Thanks.
Are you happy for Michael to do that after the meeting, or do you want that now?
So you want to pick up on something there, Liam?
You know, yeah, it's just to reduce the minutes of the meeting, then Chairman, I can pick up on the call.
So we need a seconder for those that I can see?
Yeah.
Michael. Right, on to item number 4, is the minutes of the council meeting held on the 2nd of September. Just to prove for accuracy again, page 1, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Do we need a proposal or second or for accuracy? I suppose Councillor Stokes is seconded by Robert Burgess.
Chairman, item raising that I was going to raise about the issue of our call in regarding C122 2019 regarding the transfer of the seats from Kilkeel Town Hall. Just remember, we've taken, as you will know, 41A, it's called in our 41A, which is a section within the Act which deals with process and procedure. I've put together an outline of the process and procedure. However, at this point in time, both in term, the issue is that that will be transferred to Newcastle Cinema. Newcastle Cinema have now written in to say that they no longer require the seats, so it sort of negates the need for the call-in. But as the record will show, that this decision wasn't agreed by the council, as it's been called in.
So just procedure, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All right. On to item number 5. Sorry?
Sorry.
No, it's okay. All right, Henry?
Yeah.
Good man. Good man. Thanks a lot for that. Item number 5, the minutes of the special council meeting held on the 27th of August. Just again for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Could we have a proposal or a second of accuracy proposed by Councillor Terry Hardy? Seconded by Mark Kugelger, sorry. Any items arising? No? Item number 6, the minutes of the ERT committee meeting. Go through it again for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Could we have a proposal or second for accuracy proposed by Patrick and seconded by Dermot Corn? No issues arising out of it? No. Thank you. Item number 7, SPNR. Do again for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Proposal and second for accuracy proposed by Robert. Seconded by Pete. Happy enough that there's nothing. You don't know?
Yeah, one small matter arriving on page 8, review of the AOMD structure. One of our AOMDs isn't run exclusively by council. Strangford and the Strangford and the Kale partnerships run also by ARDS and by several government departments. And the structure came before the Strangford Loughlin the Kale Partnership Management Advisory Committee, and they wanted more information. They hadn't been consulted on it, and representatives from ARDS and from the government departments felt that a stop needed to be put until there was a meeting to discuss it. And I know they've written in the chairperson of the Strangford and Lake Hill Partnership Management Advisory Committee has written in looking to speak to the chief executive or some senior management about this before this is finalised. So I'm just asking that to be noted and that that steps should be taken to meet with the Strangford and Lake Hill Partnership on this matter.
Patrick, you're looking in.
Yes, thanks, Chair. It's on pages 2 and 3 regarding meeting recordings and transparency. I'd like to make a proposal that we overturn the decision at the SPNR committee, propose that we go back and get the full costings for video recording of full council and audio recording of the working groups and forums and so on. I don't think we should make a decision on this to disregard the chance to have full transparency without even having costings. And I actually think it's a disgrace that some councillors are writing this off as a vanity project. Personally, I wouldn't put a price on openness and transparency, but in this case, I think it's integral that we do exactly that before we make a decision. I'd also like to propose a limit of 3 motions per councillor per month, rather than the far too restrictive one as currently proposed.
Do we have a seconder for Patrick's proposal? On the Pete, you're looking in before we take a decision on this?
I know Liz
is looking, but
different issue.
This is a different issue. This yeah. is the issue that Poppy's on about. He's got a proposal or a second. Are we all in favour of them? No. Nice, Liz. So before we take you want them before we take the vote, please. Go ahead.
Thanks, sir, Liz and Henry. Yeah, we discussed this at FPNR, and I suppose the term vanity project, let's qualify it, it came from me, and it's not something I'll retract. We talked about FPNR of, it's not about transparency and openness. I think our meetings are completely open and transparent. If you listen to the audios of the meetings, some of the audios have been taken and used on TV, on the news, and it seems like, you know, it was like an interview. The audios were that good. Now, the video recording of it is putting that cost on the rate payer right now, and we're talking about the whole area of uncertainty of where people find themselves in the rate process of putting another £70,000 on it and Councillor Brown's words were so we could get verbatim what has been said. You don't need to see somebody to hear verbatim what they're saying. We can hear verbatim what is being said. We also talked about the working groups, and some of the working groups do great work, especially the Quality and Good Relations working group, and you get good work out of them groups because we're talking about contentious and difficult issues where we can speak openly, and that is very important that that's protected. And I, you know, talked about having the gold star of collaboration with the Corporate Council rather than the gold star as the false gold star of transparency. To say that our minutes of the meetings now aren't up to scratch is, I think, is a disgrace to the people that work in democratic services. And yeah, we do have other councils where you've got Derry and Strabane, you've got Belfast Council that has the video recording, and it's something that we could look at in the future. Is it pertinent to the people right now? No, it's not. It simply isn't. The other thing on the issue of the notice of motions, Councillor Brown rang me and talked about his group about 6 weeks ago, his group of Alliance and Independence. And he said, under these changes, you're going to have 4 motions a month. Hey, Councillor Brown's coming back to me and I'm saying, no, sorry, you don't want 4. We want 1 less than 4. We want 3 a month. I mean, it's ludicrous. You can't sit and talk about, you know, Alliance or Councillor Brown as a councillor can only bring 1 motion when his group can bring 4. The issue here is not about the motion. The issue is not about what is being debated. Well, it should be. The issue is about bringing 4 motions in your own name. And that's what the Vanity Project is. And I will quote your own words because you rang me and you told me yourself, I'm sorry, Pete, but I have to cause a media storm at every council meeting and this is why I do this. So they're your own words. They're your own words. But let me finish, I didn't interrupt you, Councillor Brown. They're your own words when you were asking for FDLP support on something. You said, yes, I do cause media storms in the council chamber because that's what we need to do. We've only 2 Alliance councillors. Now, I think at the start of a term, we need to stop that. We need to work across party and collaborate. We've got 12 motions coming here tonight, and I went back through all the motions over the last 3 years that I've been on council. Under these proposals, no motion would have been turned away. Yes, you would think more carefully about the motions you bring, because if they fall under the remit of a committee, they shouldn't be sitting here. So no motions are going to be turned away. We actually have the longest agenda tonight
of any agenda that we've ever had when I've been here over the last 3 years. So this is not about being anti-democratic. This is about being responsible to the ratepayer, that is responsible to the people that we serve, and not bring people up to the council chamber for what are exactly vanity projects and headlines and soundbites. We need to get away from that, and that's why I propose the officer's recommendations, and I do not retract the vanity project.
There's two other people have indicated. Is it on this issue? Yes, Willie?
Yeah, it is.
Go ahead, Willie.
Just to agree with Councillor Burton in regards to supporting the original proposal. As you can see from the amount of motions that was tabled for this monthly meeting, I think it was 12 motions. We do need a mechanism where we can control the amount of motions coming. If we were to listen to Councillor Brown, you could have 30 motions, you know, coming to the council. So there needs to be a fairer way to deal with motions. And I think it is the first way that every councillor has the opportunity to put down a motion. Because you look at different legislators, they always have a party waiting. And the bigger the party, then the more opportunity for speaking time, the more opportunity for for motions to be laid. You just look at the Assembly, for example. You know, you wouldn't have got one motion per party the similar way we're talking here at the minute. That just wouldn't happen. It's on your party strength, the amount of time and the amount of motions that you are allowed to table. So I think it is very fair. I think to record workshops, pass and finish, party reps meetings, good relations committees and stuff like that, I think it does a disjustice to it, you know, because you're trying to find resolutions to complicated issues, contentious issues, and you need that freedom and that space to be able to do that. You need to be able to brainstorm and look at initiatives that mightn't even be have your party backing, but you want to have a discussion to tease it out and then bring it back into your own party structures. You know, so them opportunities have to be allowed. I think we are fully transparent. And I don't think Sinn Féin definitely won't justify spending the money in regards to that. I can think of a lot of schemes in my own area where we could spend this sort of money. Because you're not getting anything better out of it. In regards to maybe the real reason that Councillor Brown wants recordings of workshops is recorded is because he's never had them.
Henry, is it you?
Are you finished talking about this?
No, are you on this? No,
I have to go green again now.
No, you're not on this.
No, definitely.
No. Anyone on this? No more on this subject, no. So, Councillor Brown has called for a recorded vote, so.
Okay, Councillor Adjie is absent. Councillor Brown? Councillor Burgess?
Yes.
Councillor Burns? Yes. Councillor Casey?
Against.
Councillor Clark? Councillor Kearns?
Yes.
Councillor Devlin?
Yes.
Councillor Doran?
Yes.
Councillor Enright?
Yes.
Councillor Gallagher?
Yes.
Councillor Gibbon?
Yes.
Councillor Hanlon? Councillor Hannah?
Yes.
Councillor Hart?
Yes.
Councillor Hardy?
Yes.
Councillor Hoyle? Councillor Kimmon?
Against.
Councillor Larkin?
Again.
Councillor Lewis is absent. Councillor McGuinness?
Yes.
Councillor Malone?
Yes.
Councillor Mason?
Yes.
Councillor McAteer?
Yes.
Councillor McAvoy?
Yes.
Councillor McKee?
Yes.
Councillor McKevitt?
Yes.
Councillor McMurray?
Four.
Councillor McGree?
Yes.
Councillor O'Hara?
Yes.
Councillor Murray?
Yes.
Councillor Riley?
Yes.
Councillor Rowan? Councillor Savage?
Yes.
Councillor Chardon's absent. Councillor Stokes?
Yes.
Councillor Taylor?
Yes.
Councillor Tilney's absent. Councillor Traynor?
Yes.
Councillor Walker?
Yes.
That's 3, 4, 31 against, and 2 abstentions.
Sorry, I think. No. Liz?
It's the item regarding McLeish Park. Do we need to take in committee or?
Yes, Chairman, we need to take in committee.
Okay.
We propose a second.
Second.
Okay. Checking that my proposal is on, I suggest that we hold the structure for the Airbnb
which is quite note. Want to note the letter being sent in. There's no proposal.
Chair, Chairman, we need when the
proposal is seconded. Have they got it?
Proposed, Chair.
Proposal is seconded, Professor.
Yeah. Right, go ahead, Liz.
No, just we need to wait a bit. Audience need to wait. We need to clear the benches.
All right, that's right, yeah. Business coming back. Get out of the way. Right. Jimmy, your colleague's coming back in there, they are.
This will be a Korean race.
Chairman, while in committee, the council received an update in regarding the D1 process regarding Raymond McLeish Park and an update on the legal judicial review that the council is involved in. So,
you're looking in on the minutes last week?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the decisions here. It was about on the disposal of assets, and it referenced NM167, derelict playing fields, which is a bit of a misnomer, really, because you think reading that you're going to sell the playing fields of derelict, as opposed to, I understand, a field that the council bought many years ago. But this was brought up at a meeting here quite a number of months ago by myself, and something similar happened. And I'm a wee bit disappointed to see that this is on again. At the time, I understood that officers were to contact an interested party under the transfer of assets criteria to Muir Rugby Club. And you and I, Chair, visited them on one occasion about the improvement of their playing fields, premises, etc. So, and I know this week they've already been on to me, they've got wind of this, and they've been asking how indeed they can have a conversation with the council in those terms. So I'm asking that this is set aside again until at least we have some sort of discussion, which I understood would have taken place, but didn't.
With regards to derelict, the agricultural land beside the playing fields, I know it's named playing fields, but it's probably, again, it's an inherited name from the assets register. We received more than one expression of interest for the site, and based on the fact that we had more than one expression of interest, it was presented to SPNR that we would release the land on the open market to allow all interested parties to bid for the land on the open market and consider the most effective and most economic bid based on that, and it would be brought back to SPNR committee for a decision after that exercise was completed.
With all respect, Chair, to Chair Cotter, I understand there was nobody from a sporting fraternity was interested. This was a private matter, and that field was bought by the council many years ago with the intention of developing it, as we all know, and it has been leased out every year on a competition basis. And I don't understand how that is the same type of process as the transfer of an asset.
you wouldn't transfer the asset to somebody who's leasing it off for agricultural purposes, I understand. So I'm still just making a proposal that this is withdrawn tonight, and that we meet at an earliest possible stage with your rugby club, or indeed any other club that's interested.
Go ahead. Just for clarity, the request from Uri Rugby Club wasn't for it to be transferred as a community asset transfer. It was an expression of interest similar to that was submitted by the current tenants, was to acquire the land, and the community asset transfer wasn't part of that expression of interest.
Well, my understanding is that they're not aware of how this whole process works, and they seem to have been confused a bit. So thanks, Connor, for that.
One call.
There's a bit of misunderstanding.
You need a seconder if you're proposing to withdraw that particular item. You second it, Michael?
Yes,
go ahead.
Just
following the SPNR meeting, I had a similar approach made to me from Newry Rugby Club, and it appears that there was a lack of understanding in relation to the process, that if they had insight into the potential of the request, a transfer, they would probably have jumped at it. I've been out as the others, councillors from the greater area, and seen the need that they have out there. They're limited in the playing services they have, and they have a burgeoning youth set up there that they're struggling to get to accommodate young players on, and that destroys their main pitch. So, you know, on the basis of what has been said to me since that decision was made, I would second that we defer further discussions with Newry Rugby Club if that's possible, Chair.
We all agree to that then, Councillor Fiora, yes?
Okay.
Happy enough?
Yeah.
Lovely, thank you. Henry?
Yes, Chairman, it's the same part of the minutes, SPR 125, 2019, and it's in reference to Kilkee Town Hall. And Chairman, it has gone through the consultation in regards to public interest, and there was none. Now, again, it comes back to the thing of community transfer. Would that have been possible as part of the previous consultation? Because there is a huge, and I mean a huge, public interest in that property in Kilkee. And I would point out, Chairman, that all over the years, whenever the PSNI were renting part of that, a small part of that building, we were told that we can't go in there, we can't consider any alternative use until the PSNI give up that lease. Now, as soon as they give it up, unfortunately, the council seems to want to dispose of it. But, Chairman, I would be grateful if the council would withdraw that from the list tonight and go out to some form of public consultation to see what the public believe should be done with that building. And, Chairman, some councillors have been throwing out figures about, quarter of a million or 300,000. I haven't been briefed on that by any official, so it would be a bit unfair if some councillors were getting briefed and told this is possible or this isn't possible, while the Moors DEA as a unit is kept in the dark. So I think in the interest of fairness, Chairman, just in the interest of fairness, that we take that off the list and we do some form of public consultation as to the future of that building. And Chairman, Kevin Scullion, the Moors DEA, myself and Glenn and Harold had asked a number of times for a viewing of that building, and the DEA did try their best, but eventually they gave up and they come back and said Kevin Scullion is the man responsible. Now, I've been on to Kevin. Kevin is more than willing to facilitate viewing through that building by the Moors area councillors, and I would strongly or respectfully request that we facilitate this tonight, Chairman. Thank you.
So, first of all, Chair, the reason some councillors are getting updated is because some councillors are thinking and asked about it, why it's happening. And secondly, I think it's go to the private sector first for consultation, see if they want it first, then after that they decide what to do. But I think it's the private sector have their chance on this here. Thanks.
Ben?
Chair, I'm happy to second Councillor Rowley's proposals. I think that we do need to consult a little bit more with the community and give them the opportunity.
Chair. Willie, and then Harry.
Chair, just very briefly, this has been, since the council merged, we've been discussing about this issue. It's been tabled at more meetings than enough. The cost implications to develop the building has been discussed at their meetings. In fact, Councillor Riley was at a meeting when this was discussed, and I proposed that we send it the D1 process, and he seconded it.
Hey, God. Did you forget that, Henry? Hart.
John here. Thanks, Chairman.
Go ahead, Hart.
No, I agree with Councillor Riley. I mean, I remember when it was the Kilkeel Town Hall. I remember when it was the Picture House, and obviously it's only one of the rare single scheme Picture Houses, only two, I think, last two to be going in Northern Ireland. And when it was the Kilkeel Town Hall, I remember it being widely used. I was at various events, and there was concerts, there was pantomime, there was sources of choirs in it from all over the country. And I think that there is a use for it, and because it has been lying dormant for so long, and anybody did ask, oh no, the PS and I have it, we can't use it, and that was the excuse we put on it for 5 years, but that is freed up now. And I was a bit surprised in my time with the Outer Council that I've never seen any mention of consultation for what was going to happen to it. And I think it's only a bit fair that the consultation done with the building. If nobody wants it, nobody wants it, but I don't think anyone has really got that opportunity to even view the building. We've had it asked, and it would be nice to see what it's like. It's years since I was in it, and at least we'll have a view. So, if we want to see, well, maybe, but they do work. So, I just would agree with...
Was it the silent movies when you went to Harvard?
Sorry?
Silent movies?
Yes.
Quite still a piano in the front, Lord Henry.
You can be the first one there, Charlie.
Father.
Thanks, Chair. Just for a bit of clarity, I have been in discussion with the Kilkeel Development Association over the last 6 or so months in relation to this property, and they were made aware of when it was released on the D1, and they didn't manage to submit a bid or an expression of interest, and I've been in contact with them since it closed. So the local Kilkeel Development Association were aware of the process when it was submitted and when it closed, just for information.
Right, there's a proposal and a seconder, and Henry's called for a recorded vote.
Chair, just before we go to that.
Sorry, Pete.
I just need a bit of clarity on the process there. The assets, we can't sit in them forever and a day. And the Kilkeel Town Hall did come up at many meetings that I was at, and you know, Connor's saying that the group was well informed. Can I get clarity on the Councillor Riley second? If they go into the D1 process, and if that's the case, what has changed in that? Because I have no problem deferring it for more consultation, but there has to be a proper reason for that. Like, it can't be just a fairness for the sake of the fairness. There has to be a legitimate reason. So if we can get clarity on that before we go into the record of vote.
Did he? Well, he said he did. Did he? He did. There you are. He did. Yeah.
So just, Councillor Vernon, for the clarity in the process of the D1, it's been through the same process as all our other assets. It's been presented to Strategic Projects Working Group, where a recommendation was made then to take it to SPNR, where the recommendation would be that it would be released on the open market. SPNR have made that decision at last month's meeting, and that's why it's presented tonight.
There you go. It's better. Right. And again, you only have the second his move. What's wrong with what is it now?
Just a wee bit of clarity on something else. Councillor McKee actually said at the last meeting, whenever we discussed this, that all seats and whatever else belongs to that should be in the building. So they should. And I did raise it, so I did that. A number of seats had been loaned to the Kingdom GAA. Has the council looked into recovering them? I asked that at the last meeting, I got no charity whatsoever, should I have been?
Put new cushions on them.
Chairman,
we are.
Chairman, can I just make one point? It was suggested about the KDA. I can assure the council that myself, the other councillors and some local interested parties, Willie and Sean didn't turn up for whatever reason. But there was a very detailed presentation done on what could be that building could be used for and how it could be developed and where the funding would come from in great detail. And I'm surprised that you're telling us tonight that there was no expression of interest there, because we were left with the firm belief that that expression interest would be made. Whether they didn't understand that or whatever, I don't know, but certainly that's what we were told. So, Chairman, just, I think it further justifies, Chairman, the proposal to defer this until we get some more consultation done with the community. Thank you.
Right.
Chair,
sorry, Pete.
We'll have to come back in because it's sort of, if there's confusion here, you know, it's very hard to put a recorded vote. I proposed, you know, these assets to go on the open market sale, but if there is an expression of interest that is in the pipeline from another group, you know, that the officers aren't aware of, we need to look into that. So it's not about, you know, deferring it for, the officers mightn't know about it, but if it's been said here tonight, you know, I have no problem if it's going for another month's consultation, but not to leave it indefinitely. So if you want to take it off for the next council meeting and bring it back, as you know, I have no issue, but it can't go on forever and a day.
Connor, maybe clarify that.
Thanks, Chair. I don't think there's any doubt that KDA are interested. I just think they had difficulty getting a sponsoring department through the community asset transfer process. They couldn't express an interest in their own right, but they had to get a sponsoring department to express an interest on their behalf. I don't know if that was the issue, but that's my understanding of why an expression of interest was maybe not submitted.
If they're in a position, through the chair, if they're in a position to submit an EOI in the next 4 weeks, I don't think we should be closing the door on them. So I would reverse the decision that I made in SPNR, no problem.
So Henry accepting the end of that for 4 weeks?
Yeah. Chair, could I ask for a point of information? Councillor Clark can actually tell us where Henry seconded that at. Was it at a workshop, or was it at a full council meeting, or where was it? What meeting was it at?
It was at a strategic projects working group where the main items of the business was the D1 process and the assets that were going to be put into that process. And clearly, I proposed and Councillor Riley seconded. It'll be in minutes. So.
Put it forward as a proposal, and then I'll go to the recorder.
Do you agree with that, Henry? Pete's suggesting a 4 week stay of execution. Happy enough for that? Yeah. We're all in agreement with that. Good, move on. Thank you, guys. Right, item number eight. Active and handy communities. Just go through them for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we have a proposer, a seconder. Proposed by Barra, seconded by Mr. Kevitt. Any issues arising from it? No. So, thank you. Item number 9, Neighbourhood Services Committee. Same again, just go through for accuracy. Page 1. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Proposal and second, proposed by Perry, second by Glynn. Happy enough for that?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Item on the. Sorry? Mm-hmm. Item on the. Mm-hmm. Item on the
services. Glynn wasn't at the meeting, Chairman.
Glynn wasn't at the meeting. Neighbourhood.
Was.
That's the word I'm getting from the right hand side here. I think getting us from this side here. Jack, and you wanted in there, did you?
Yeah, it was just the correspondence. I had indicated at a previous meeting that we would look at the friendly flower planting on the rural carriageway between Uri and Warren Point and read them. I thought it was
Neighbourhood Services.
Yeah.
Is it? Where is it? What page is that?
It's negative on the agenda. It's on the
I prefer the letter, that's okay. But it really wasn't.
Item 17 on the agenda.
Yeah.
Correspondence in DFI regarding the
paper. Yeah. Aye, that's on the agenda. Okay, right. Okay. Well, sorry, it was the same thing. It's in your. Happy enough to move on then?
Yeah, that's okay. I'll take it up.
Okay. On to item number 10. Extract of the planning committee meeting.
No issues.
Yeah. Item number 11, minutes of the audit committee. It's for accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Those are the seconder for that. Was Una seconded by Pete. I'll hop in off that. Voices rising. Right, conferences and events. Liam.
Yeah, Chairman, the first one is the NILGA Changing Places Conference. Again, we've identified the members for the members at NILGA to attend. Just to bring that to your attention. It's tomorrow, just Chairman, by the way. Charity of Institute for Housing, again, conference will be held on the 14th of October in 2019.
Item number 13, your agenda.
Chairman, the conference, Charity Institute of Housing Conference.
Is the cost us, is that, Chair? No, no cost.
No.
Okay. Nobody.
Anybody interested in going, may come to Sarah or whatever afterwards. Sorry, Nina. Right, okay.
Can we get anyone else?
Can we forward our names on for both the next two conferences by tomorrow?
Yes, just Chairman, we get, just so we can get registered, conscious of members could do, by,
yeah,
come back to us by end of play tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Some emergency with that.
14. Chairman, then the All Ireland Sustainable Energy Forum conference on the 18th of October in Dublin City Hall. It's a free event, just travel costs, Chairman. Councillor Enright is expressing interest to attend. Have you enough? Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Correspondence then, Chairman, we're into, again, the first item of correspondence is the letter from the House Executive regarding grass cutting services. I know it was raised at the meeting of the House Executive last week.
Congratulations.
Chair, just to say, we did have it out to the House Executive at the special meeting in regards to not just grass cutting, this was Councillor Tinley's motion, it was also about the way the estates were being kept, both from back alleyways and also in regards to ownership issues in regards where cars were parked and stuff like that. There were some estates that hadn't been cleaned for years. In my own experience, we carried out a number of cleanups, and it was quite clearly that they weren't being cleaned by anybody, and that includes the council. So I welcome the approach. I proposed at that meeting that the three organisations come together in a cohesive way to ensure that residents have a good standard of clean neighbourhoods and what they are paying their rates and their taxes for.
Okay. Number 16.
Chairman, number 16 is a letter from DIRA regarding animal cruelty. Again, the All Ireland Register of Individuals Convicted of Animal Welfare Rights. Again, the department's given a fairly comprehensive response. And again, the significant cost to which to access conviction data. So officials from the department have met with DOJ within last month to re-examine the possibility of third-party access and controls that an organisation would need to implement, but the situation remains unchanged.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just briefly, just to thank the Permanent Secretary for the response. You're right, it is a comprehensive response I've had, but I disagree with. Maybe from the review that maybe people's position has changed. I certainly have talked to a number of shelters who would want that information, and I think, you know, to put that there, that shelters don't want to know the background of people when they're coming in to rehome dogs. I find that astonishing. So we follow up, and I'll follow up in my own capacity on this. So I want to just put on record my thanks to the Permanent Secretary, and also to keep on the action sheet with the Irish Minister until we get a response from the Irish Government as well. Thanks, Chair.
Item 17 then, Chairman, this is the bee friendly flower plantings in the DFI and their response on to it, Chairman.
It's Liz, first, and then Dr. Sure. He's been posting all night in this one.
Yeah, Chair, I suppose it's just to say it's disappointing, the response from the AFI. I've obviously brought a motion tonight regarding the areas that council have responsibility for, and was thinking, would it be possible to invite them then, because the motion now will be deferred to the Sustainability and Climate Change Forum, so is it possible to invite the AFI along to that, to maybe look at where we can, you know, if the country all, but where we could, where there's possibilities to do the wildflower plant schemes, because I know in England the success of them is huge, so I think it's something that we can't just accept that response. I think it's something we need to explore further, so if we could ask them to attend. Maybe, I know the next one's Thursday, but there's one on the 16th of November or middle of November, if we can ask them to attend.
Yes, Chairman, we'll follow that up.
Okay, thank you.
Chairperson, I was going to say something similar. Basically, the department is saying we are supporters of the All Ireland Pollinator Plan, but we're going to do absolutely nothing with our grass to support the pollinator plan. And in particular, we're not going to do anything about the pilot project you proposed for the A2. So basically, you couldn't get a more negative response if you had sat with a committee and tried to pick one up. It's a fact that councils in England have been doing this for years. But it can't be, the department suggests that it costs more to do this is a nonsense. I have a document sitting here on my desktop talking about how much money saved by councils in England by doing what it is was suggested in the original motion. So I think this needs to be strongly challenged, and we need DAMS to come up with proposals about where they will actually carry out a pilot program.
A couple of staying comments from Kate Hogan.
Yes, sir. I was very disappointed to see the tone and tenor of the letter. So while recognising good enough that it does, that there were elements of it took on board, you know, the safety aspect of it. But I began to disbelieve the content of the letter when I saw that they actually said that the only reason for cutting one swathe of grass along the country road was to improve biodiversity. So I take that as a pinch of salt. But disappointingly, the letter failed to offer any recognition really of what the dual purpose in my proposal a couple of months ago was, which is to enhance the bee population and, very importantly, to provide a striking entrance into one of our main tourist destinations in the Mourns, getting into the Mourns. And there was absolutely no engagement regarding, in the letter, how maintenance could be looked at imaginatively, you know, as part of a whole programme, taking in lots of interested parties. So it's extremely disappointing that there's no effort even consider any parcel planting. They alluded to soil conditions, etc. I could see no evidence, or they didn't cite any evidence that they tested the soil or that in any parts of it. So I just think it was write the letter, get rid of it, get rid of the problem, because it's too much trouble for the local office, and that's where that letter came from. The local office, we don't have tuppence to spend anyway. But so I would agreement with Liz. I think we need somebody more senior to have a chat about this with and try to explain to them actually what we're thinking.
Queen Bee.
Okay.
Are we Queen Bee?
Nice chair.
Sure.
We agreed then, haven't we? Sorry, Willie.
Chair, just to support the proposal, when we had DFI Roads officials here in our clinics, we raised with Stephen Duffy the issue of providing wildflower spaces, and he said quite clearly that if we could identify and agree an area of DFI roads, that they would be content, and if we could get a partner organisation, you know, a voluntary sector, a voluntary group, that they'd be willing to explore their issues. They were saying it was issues about cost implications and personnel and stuff like that, so if we maybe tease that out at the Sustainability Climate Change Forum, that might be a way forward. But I think it's important that all statutory bodies are doing everything they can to support biodiversity and pollinators as we move forward. So anything that can mitigate, you know, the impact of cars has to be welcome.
Okay.
Chairman, I was just on the issue of biodiversity and promoting it. There is quite a bit of ground the council has that we lease out for literally a few hundred pounds a year for agricultural use. And maybe we should look seriously at developing some of that land as examples of how to promote biodiversity. So an example is one that has been done in the Mourne's area, and people travel from far and near to walk through it whenever it's in flower, and it is spectacular. But it does increase the bee population in the local area, and the people who have the produce honey, or they don't produce honey, but their bees produce honey. They take great value. They take great value from it. So it is something very, very worthwhile, Shannon.
Okay. Nobody else there? No, not that I can see. Next item, Liam.
Next item, Chairman, then, is updated information, consolidated guidance on Councillor Valence. I just refer you to paragraph 5 in terms of some of the changes in that. So, happy to take any questions, Chairman. And we'll be making the changes to our guidance on our website and on that basis, Chairman.
And the next one. No comment. Okay. Last number 19.
And last number 19 is correspondence from Belfast City Council. Again, at a meeting passed a motion which has been proposed by Councillor Helling, signed by Councillor Lyons. Councillor notes and welcomes the work of Northern Ireland Commissioner for Children and Young People in promoting positive parenting and equal protection for children. And then it goes on to deal with the issue in terms of legislative program which removed the defence of reasonable chastisement of her parents who physically punish their children and provide more support and guidance for parents who have constructive and effective ways to encourage better behaviour and development of children. So they'd welcome any comments from the council in relation to this motion.
Okay, on to the notices of motion now.
Chairperson, just maybe, I know they were saying about noting this correspondence, but I think we should probably do more than just note it. They're asking us to become champions in ensuring that the inclusion of equal protection for children legislation is brought forward in any future programme for government. And I believe that as a council, we should equally write to the Assembly group party leaders and to the Executive Office to ensure that they think very long about including such a protection for children legislation in a future programme for government. I think that I would make it as a proposal if this council does that.
Sure. I second that proposal. I agree with you all. Sinn Féin agree that children should be properly protected and have equal protection from physical assault or punishment the same way as adults. Removing the defence of reasonable chastisement in cases of corporal punishment would allow the north of Ireland to join with 54 countries around the world which have moved to protect children from violence. The defence was removed in the south of Ireland in 2015. Sure. Physical punishment has damaging effects on children's health and development. Physical punishment of children often becomes inhumane and degrading, and it violates their physical integrity, demonstrates disrespect for human dignity, and undermines self-esteem in later life. For too long now, parents have been given mixed messages about how to effectively discipline their children. Updating our laws would give clarity to parents who, when at their most stressed, could be supported to deal with challenging situations. Parenting is a difficult job, and children need guidelines and boundaries, but hitting should not be the way to approach discipline. However, legal reform alone is not sufficient. We often hear parents describing how upset they are with themselves after hitting their child. As well as reforming the law, efforts need to be made to provide parents with more support on positive parenting. Parents need help and advice to promote positive approaches to discipline and how to set and enforce appropriate boundaries for children's behaviour. The time has come to take this important next step in child protection and ensure that children are better looked after and properly protected under the law.
Are you all in agreement for that? We are.
Yep.
Thanks very much for that. On now to the notices of motion. There are 12 in total. 7 will be heard tonight and 5 will be deferred to the relevant committees. And as we are here, the first one is the rollout of 5G.
Yeah.
Which is going to be heard at the ERT committee. You're allowed to read out, Patrick, your motion, proposer and seconder.
Well,
and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Chair. Motion reads, this council notes the concerns associated with the rollout of 5G across Northern Ireland and undertakes to carry out a comprehensive and detailed report analysing the risks and benefits of 5G rollout within the district, considering all available evidence and information in doing so. This report will then be tabled at a future meeting for members to express their support or opposition to 5G.
Be a second for that. Andy. Right, I'm moving one up the scale to next. It's the second last one, the Affordable Child Care by Councillor Laura Davin. She actually sent me an email during the week. There's an issue externally that needs to be dealt with, so I'm offering a chance to move it up, and I hope that the people who are doing the climate change one don't mind Laura stepping in front of them. Laura.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for agreeing to that. It's much appreciated. In terms of the motion, this council acknowledges the Employers for Childcare 10th Annual Childcare Survey, which is based on research with 3,600 parents and childcare providers and is the most extensive study of its kind here in Northern Ireland. The report reveals that the average cost of full-time childcare pay in Northern Ireland is £166 per week, and that half of all families are spending more than 20% of their overall household income on childcare, a figure that rises to an astounding 63% for low-income households. Council further notes that 3 years ago, Party of the Assembly unanimously supported an SDLP proposal to provide 20 hours free universal childcare with a plan for an increase to 30 hours. This council supports the call for vital and urgent reforms and investment in our childcare sector. This research provides a robust evidence base highlighting why childcare needs to be a key and immediate priority for any reformed executive. This council resolves to write to all political party leaders to ask them to support 30 hours basic free childcare provision for working families. So, Chair, these figures speak for themselves. As many of you know, I'm now a mother of two and can see firsthand the amazing care, love and attention that my son Tom in particular receives in both his creche and my playgroup setting. I adore hearing his stories and see him developing and maturing thanks to the wonderful care that he receives. So my issue isn't with the providers, as they have substantial overheads and need these costs to keep the lights on and the doors open. My issue is the central government. 3 years ago, the SDLP tabled bold proposals to increase the allocation of childcare to 20 hours with plans to increase that to 30. We argued successfully that childcare costs were a significant burden on working households and deprived working parents and most often working women of the opportunity of returning to their jobs. In the intervening period, unfortunately, the situation has simply just become worse. The 2019 childcare cost survey shows that childcare remains the highest monthly bill for working families after their mortgage or rent payments. Worryingly, the survey also showed that 41% of parents have used savings, loans or credit cards to pay for the cost of childcare. We should not be forcing people into debt to care for their children. In 2019, people shouldn't have to choose between a fulfilling career and caring for their child. Enhancing provision by bringing it to the level currently provided in England would allow parents to do both. By providing subsidised childcare, there is an economic multiplier effect. Both parents continue working and a third worker in childcare is added to the labour force. All of them pay taxes. Without childcare, two workers are turned into one and both labour productivity and the tax base shrink for the same. When looking at this information, it's beyond frustrating that here in the North we've yet to progress this matter for the betterment of our whole society. A greater investment in childcare should not be viewed as a primary benefit to parents only in terms of monetary cost. High maternal employment rates and affordable, high-quality childcare not only helps families financially, but also helps with the development of the child. I know many friends of mine who work until Wednesday or Thursday of each week just to cover the cost of their childcare, and many people are back in the workplace just to keep their foothold in the labour market and their skills current. The gender pay gap, which substantially decreases lifetime earnings for women, including their pension and national insurance contributions, can in many cases be tracked back to gaps that women in particular who take on most of the care and duties take to raise their children. To ensure that women are properly represented in public life and the public and private sectors, we need to invest in childcare and ensure that women in particular do not have to make a choice between a fulfilling career and the knowledge that their children are being well looked after and developed during the working day. Thankfully, there is now an acceptance that childcare is a privilege and a duty for mums and dads equally. There's also an understanding that people who work, even people who work full time, will still develop perfectly warm relationships with their children. In fact, whether and how their mum in particular works outside the home can have a very strong impact on the world view of girls and boys and their understanding of their place in the world and the options and aspirations available to them. So, Chair, this is fundamentally an issue of workers' rights and creating a fairer and more just society, and I'd ask members here tonight to support this motion.
Javi.
Yeah, I would like to thank Councillor Devlin for bringing this motion forward and Sinn Féin will be supporting it.
as a mother who pays for childcare, it really strikes a chord.
You second the motion? You going to second the motion?
Yeah.
Right.
It really strikes a chord with me, and obviously there's so many in this district as well. As Councillor Devon said, patterns show that some families in the north are spending over 20% of their household income on childcare, and this is their largest or second largest monthly expenditure. Overwhelming evidence demonstrates that high quality early childhood care and education is a crucial component of a child's healthy development, and intervention at the earliest point of a child's life is paramount, particularly evidenced in adverse childhood environments and experiences. Yet, the average full-time cost of childcare places is £166 per week, and over half of the parent respondents to the Employers for Childcare survey stated that they have had to cut back or go without in order to meet their childcare bill. This is structurally unsustainable and failing both parents and childcare providers. As Councillor Devon said, 41% of families have had to use their savings, overdrafts, loans, credit cards or other means to pay for their childcare. This cannot be allowed to continue. Sinn Féin supports the Childcare for All campaign and work closely with Employers for Childcare and the Cross-Party Working Group on Early Education and Childcare that seeks to deliver a childcare infrastructure that achieves high quality, affordable, educational, accessible, flexible and sustainable childcare which meets the needs of children, parents and providers. Further to this, there is also a gender equality dimension to childcare, acting as a barrier to women's economic participation, whereby the current costs are forcing women out of work as it is proving completely financially unviable. A childcare strategy for the North must be developed, which also addresses inequality of access for rural families. Parents with disabled children, families with more than two children, traveller, migrants and minority ethnic families, those on low income and single parent families for whom the monthly cost of childcare rises can be 63% of their household income. We call for the vital and urgent reform of investment in our childcare sector, which needs to be a key and immediate priority for any future executive. So I'd be happy to second that motion.
Second.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and also in support of the motion. Just a couple of brief points. You know, investment is mistakenly seen as a luxury in childcare, and not something that contributes directly to the national economy. But while it does, and there's a very clear and direct link to full employment and childcare. Childcare will also greatly assist women in achieving full equality in the workplace as well. Myth is that, you know, it doesn't pay, but actually it does, because it'll be paid back in full in terms of tax and contributions as well. Totally support all that's been said so far in the vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. David?
Chair, thank you. My party will be also supporting the motion, and I thank Councillor Devon for bringing it forward. Well, I was going to just start now, actually. Sure, I became a dad for the first time in February this year, and my son's 8 months old now, and his mum's due to go back later this month to work. God willing, my mum's going to be looking after him. So from that point of view, that pressure, you know, that could be there, won't be there, hopefully. But certainly from anecdotal evidence, and you know, certainly many discussions that I've had with friends prior to, you know, George's mum going to work, it's certainly clear that it does place a very severe financial strain on any couple or any family that have to encounter this. And certainly anything that government can do to reduce that burden, they must do that. And certainly that's on that basis, that's why we're very happy to support this. And I hope if and when an executive does return, that this is one of its priorities, because it will serve as a great benefit to the local community.
Andy?
Thank you, Chair. We're quite happy to support the motion, and whenever it comes to writing the political leaders, you know, our party will be supporting wholeheartedly, so thank you.
William?
Just to say that thank Councillor Devon for bringing the motion. Our party will also be supporting the motion.
Ben?
Chair, just on this here, and listen, and thank Laura for bringing this forward. £166 is quite a bit there. It's 20% of, you know, somebody's income. So if you just multiply that by 5, that's what you need to be earning every week. And I would suggest that there's not very many earning that type of money. You know, if you look at it from that point of view. So to be quite honest with you, if you start and really look into that,
it's the lowest earners and that are really going to be impacted the most by childcare. They have no family support whatsoever. So, to be quite honestly, Laura, all credit to you for bringing it forward and highlighting it. This is a hidden cost, and actually, what it's doing as well is actually taking females out of their careers, possibly, so that is, if they have two children. You know, once you get up into two children, you might get a little bit of discount there, so you might. But at the same time, you're talking about a substantial part of your income, so to be quite honest with you, it does need addressed. And I know I have a daughter living in England, and she, at this moment in time, has access to 30 hours free. So, to be quite honest, you know, just, I think we do need to support this, and we do need to bring it forward, and hopefully Stormont will be there to sort it out soon, if something comes back.
Laura, do you want to sum up? I think there's anyone else.
No, I think it's good to bring a motion that then not getting some slack for it. Thank you everybody for comments and everything, and thank you for taking mine early.
No problem. We're all agreed then, councillors, yes. Thank God for that. Thank you. On to climate change emergency declaration. That's Cadogan Enright and Patrick Brown.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll read out the motion first then. In October 2018, the UN announced that we have 12 years to save the planet. Scientists gave the starkest warning yet that our chances of tackling climate change and averting disaster are slipping away. They said 2030 would be too late to avoid the 2% rise in global temperatures and climate catastrophe. The UN says action by government actors would need to be taken now, but Westminster is paralysed by Brexit and Stormont is not sitting. In view of the UN's climate change warning for 2030, Council declares a climate change emergency and directs management to effect dramatic short-term changes in every area under its control. All Council departments need to reflect this emergency with immediate and concrete steps. Every plan or target that the Council produces needs to have concrete measures to reflect this emergency. Every external body or agency that Council influences or directs needs to be preparing for 2030, and this will extend to the general public also through the planning and building control processes. Council should refer to Denmark, Scotland, Norway, Sweden and Germany to find best practice across all areas of sustainable development and low carbon technology for Newry, Mourne and Down Council. I'll speak to the motion then, Chairperson.
Yeah, go ahead.
More than half the councils across the UK, 15 in the Republic and 3 in Northern Ireland, have passed climate change emergency resolutions, many creating net zero carbon targets as early as 2030. If we pass this motion tonight, we need to consider setting a similar 2030 target for our own local area. This is all the more urgent as, based on the Paris Accord, the UK's allocation of CO2 will run out as early as 2023 and Ireland's as early as 2021. After that, we are eating into the allocation for the third world just to stop global temperatures rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius. There are many steps that Council can take now: boosting employment, energy affordability, improving community cohesion and preserving biodiversity. Council pension funds across Britain and Ireland are being divested from fossil fuel investments and into renewables to ensure our pensions benefit from future market trends. In Bristol, for instance, the City Council published its City Leap prospectus in May 2018, aimed at delivering $1 billion of low-carbon smart energy infrastructure in Bristol's energy system over the next 10 years. We need to do the same. Many of the measures needed would only have minor implications for budgets and can help Council raise substantial new funds to take the rates pressure off our hard-pressed high streets. Westminster is banning the sale of petrol and diesel cars after 2040, the dates 2030 in the Republic and 2032 in Scotland. We need a plan in place now to preserve our filling stations for future use as charging stations for tourists and visitors to the area, to ensure we don't damage our tourism potential or our rate space. Our grid will have to be strengthened to ensure that every home has a charging point. We need to copy the Republic and ensure that all new homes in our council area have a charging point to avoid expensive retrofitting. We need to help our staff transition to electric cars. Central government gives 3,500 grants to install a home-based charging point to anyone buying an electric car. Many government agencies give the same mileage rate for electric cars as they do for 2-litre diesel cars to encourage the switch. In our council, we pay 23p per mile less to electric cars. We can also more rapidly transition our own fleet. For instance, Dundee City Council is in the vanguard of the switch to zero carbon transport. They're on target to have their own fleet fully electrified within 15 years. Dundee has the UK's largest local authority electrified fleet with 117 electric cars and vans in use, and is planning to buy 65 more, replacing its highly polluting diesel lorries and road sweepers with electric vehicles. Dundee even runs subsidised electric minibuses for some of its poorest neighbourhoods. Dundee boasts the largest number of electric minicabs anywhere in the UK and a council-owned network of 4 solar-powered charging hubs capable of taking 78 cars at a time for charging, with sites for another 60 being built, plus the highest number of rapid chargers of any Scottish city. It's now opening a rooftop solar-powered charging hub at the city centre multi-storey car park. We could do this. Our council leads community planning. We need to look ahead to get our partners on board for the opportunities. Economists projected the transition from the fossil fuel economy to a renewable energy economy will bring about the biggest growth of locally based employment since the Industrial Revolution. But there will be losers as well as winners. Car mechanics in our area will see a loss of employment as electric cars need little maintenance and a few parts to go wrong. This skilled workforce could be retrained to deliver thousands of PV panels, heat pumps and solar panels that would be needed across our council area. All EU countries have target dates for when legacy buildings would need to be heated without fossil fuels. As early as 2030 in Scandinavian countries, 2045 in Scotland and 2050 in England and Wales. Northern Ireland has no target. Our council can set this target for our own area and beef up accordingly our council-led warm home scheme to tackle this huge job over the coming decade. Warrington Borough Council recently organised the investment of £5.2 million to provide PV panels for 1,500 properties in its area. This project saves about £233 per annum on energy bills for each house. We can enhance building standards and deliver zero carbon homes and buildings in our council area. The UK is expecting to build 150,000 homes this year. Most of these houses will require retrofitting in the next 20 years to make them suitable for the UK's own current net zero carbon target. This makes no sense. It urgently needs to stop. We can adopt a zero carbon homes and building standard. This should include all major refurbishments and extensions as in the Republic. The UK government has provided legal clarification that local authorities are not restricted in their ability to require energy efficiency standards above building regulations. For example, Ipswich and Cambridge councils have included a requirement for all new homes to meet standard equivalent Code for Sustainable Homes Level 4, much more than current national standards. In London, the mayor's powers are greater, and the standard is now zero carbon homes. And remember, most high-tech building products companies like Kingspan are based around County Down. To deliver the amount of renewable energy to replace fossil fuel for consumption in our area, we would need at least 7 wind farms similar to the size recently proposed in Hillsown. We should be setting a rates target for renewable energy projects in our area of at least £10 million per annum to drive developments across the district.
10 minutes is nearly up, according to standing orders.
Two more paragraphs, Chairperson. The council is sitting on Ireland's largest energy storage system under Camlock Lake. The system was 90% completed and then abandoned at the start of the Troubles. A community-owned project like this would bring great wealth to the Camlock area. Indeed, there's no reason why the council itself can't own wind farms for the benefit of the community. Warrington Borough Council has become the first local authority to produce all its own electricity from green energy, owning 2 giant solar farms in Hull and York, expecting to generate millions of pounds in profits per annum over the next 30 years. The solar farm owned by West Suffolk Council has smashed generation targets in its third year of operation, making an overall income of £4 million. This year, West Suffolk Council received income of £1.5 million from its wind farm, which was £100,000 more than it was expected in the budget. Chairperson, all new local authority buildings should be zero carbon. Exeter City Council has adopted this passive house standard with a considerable effect on its bottom line. Had Downpatrick Leisure Centre been operated in this way, we would have saved £150,000 per annum. There is much we can do as we currently stand without even looking at the draft 2030 development plan, which I believe my seconder, Patrick Brown, will refer to. I commend the motion to council.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
Thank you, Chair. It's a little bit shorter, but I'll try my best. The storm's following me. I can't help it. Thank you very much, Cadogan, for bringing the motion. Comprehensive comments, as always, plenty to reflect on there. Now, I'd like to offer one amendment, which we discussed beforehand, which hopefully you'll accept, and that is, in addition to the wording of the motion, that every officer's report brought to council for decision or noting has a section which must be completed headed Implications for Environment and Sustainability. This would be akin to the council section that already exists on equality and good relations. Before any other group leaders accuse me of trying to make a media storm with that, it's actually a FDLP proposal, which I have borrowed from Belfast City Council, which I think is a very good one. Accepted. Thank you very much. There's perhaps no greater challenge facing the future of humanity than climate change. While the focus should undoubtedly be on top-down and legally robust and comprehensive strategies from central and multilateral governments, particularly those that curtail, that can curtail huge corporate entities who contribute the most to environmental degradation, there is a crucial role for local councils to play in shaping the climate movement and inspiring grassroots action before it's too late. We need to go further than just passing this climate emergency. The UN announcement last October means we must redraft the Newry Morning Down development plan to deal with climate change. Even if the Stormont executive were up and running, and even if Westminster were not paralysed by constant Brexit crises, the need to deal with these developmental issues would still sit with the council and its development plan. Council is affiliated to the Nuclear Free Local Authorities, as we'll all know. The NFLA have informed Cadogan and myself that lawyers across England have been writing to as many as 100 local authorities across the country who are currently creating their local development plans and warning them that they will violate their legal obligations and risk legal challenge if their development plans do not introduce detailed proposals to mitigate climate change. Newry Morning Down's local development plan to 2030 went out for consultation in June 2018, and the consultation closed on 24th of August 2018. Our draft development plan currently is minimalistic in dealing with climate change. It notes the lack of national government targets and oddly comments that there is no system-wide need for further renewable energy being connected to the grid. I challenge this. The main areas for redrafting our development plan, I'll give three, are in coastal erosion and land instability. We need to plan for the official estimate of sea level rise of 1 metre by 2080. Failing to take action over this over the next 10 years until 2030 will only make the issue more difficult and more expensive to deal with, especially with our district's 160-kilometre coastline. Secondly, in renewable energy, we need to transition the district's infrastructure to accommodate the electrification of transport over the next 10 years. To 2030 is not mentioned in the development plan. And microgeneration of electricity through renewable technologies could potentially create a revenue windfall for our residents, local businesses, farmers, and indeed our council in terms of rates. Finally, economic development. The development plan fails to note the economic upside of transitioning the district to renewable energy over the development plan period. As renewable energy is produced locally, it is extraordinary that the potential available value of this transition is not estimated in the plan. It would be reasonable to suggest, as Cadogan has mentioned, a 10 million per annum increase in rates from these sources by the end of the 10-year period to 2030, if we had a permissive and positive regime of development for renewable energy. Indeed, the recent proposal for a wind farm near Hilltown that was narrowly lost by a casting vote in council had a rateable income in excess of 1.5 million. Fellow councillors, I hope that you will support this motion here tonight. Council needs to follow up this declaration of a climate change emergency with real short-term actions aimed at directing management to put in place best practice solutions that are being developed already by other councils across Britain and Ireland. Thank you.
It's
just for clarification, because members, in terms of dealing with the factually incorrections,
in terms of Councillor Brown's posting. First of all, there is two development plans. There's the Newry-Moore and Banbridge development plan and the Argent North Down and Down development plan are the only existing plans. The council has not published its local development plan. It went out for consultation on a preferred options paper. The plan strategy won't be published until within the next 12 months. The plan strategy will then deal with a lot of these issues into it and again reflect a lot of the sustainability. So just to make that clear, that we have not got a local development plan currently out for consultation.
Chair,
just on this here, just to emphasise, I'm speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for the Democratic Unionist Party in this here. I would be happy enough to support the tone and the sentiments of Cadogan's policy. I actually think that the council, it would be a great idea if the council led the way on this by electrifying as much as possible, being as efficient as much as possible, because I actually do believe, although I was on a radio show there not that long ago where two of my colleagues didn't agree with me, I believe that global warming is happening, so it is. I believe it's happening. What Councillor Brown is saying is correct, that there's coastal erosion. Go to certain parts of the world, their islands are actually disappearing, so they are. One question that maybe Cadogan could answer this in a summing up. Renewables only are accounting for about maybe 15-20%, and even if they increase significantly, electricity is produced in many different ways, from coal, gas, nuclear. Electricity could be produce it, there's a problem too, so it is. So that needs to be looked at as well, how that's all taken forward. So I would support the gist and the tone of it, Cadogan, so thanks for bringing it forward.
Willie.
Thanks, Chair. And I'd like to thank the members for bringing the motion forward also. I'm going to propose an amendment and we're asking to remove councils should refer to Denmark, Scotland, Norway, Sweden and Germany to find best practice across all areas of sustainable development and low carbon technology for Newry-Moore and Down Council, and amend with the following wording: councils should follow best practice from across Europe to mitigate the impacts of climate change. Furthermore, councils shall convene a symposium to assist in developing an action plan to mitigate the impacts of climate change.
Thanks, Fred. Q? I thought you were finished. I'll just go. Did you switch off there, Q?
Sorry.
Start all over again. Switch out all the lights. Henry, please. Try and cooperate with us.
Chair, I suppose to say, first of all, I think the public want change. The public are open to change. The number of, and you just have to see the number of protests throughout the world in regards to the issue of climate change, and particularly from our young people who are leading the way in many regards to this. There's different aspects, many different aspects in regards to how we do mitigate against the impact of climate change. We have to work towards a zero waste policy. I'm building upon the great work of the council and the work and efforts that are being put in. We need to be resource efficiency. We need a greater involvement in the circular economy, which will reduce carbon emissions and reducing resilience or reliance on scarce resources. And I went through neighbourhood services there tonight was the reuse initiative. And that's part of that circular economy, where you've got partners who are reusing and upcycling things that would be they would be either go to landfill or they would have to be the costly process of recycling. It doesn't come cheap recycling. So anything we can do to allow people to reuse items has to be welcomed. In regards to shaping our future of waste management, there's great opportunities to work with the local community in regards to that. And also we talked about the development plan. We were at the very early stages of the development plan, and a lot of these issues can be addressed through the development plan. Particularly one I would like to see is sustainable urban drainage systems in all major planning applications, where there's water storage and the reuse of that grey water in the use of the planning application. I think that's very important, and I raised the numbers of times in regards to this. It would certainly reduce the impact of flooding, but it's also a better use of resources. There is an issue in regards to who then inspects the subs, and I think we should be able to get around that and find a solution to these issues. Also, increasing tree cover across the district is vitally important, and some of the easiest things that this council can do is to plant more trees right across our district. And that's why I brought forward a motion in regards to a tree strategy. That gives us the basis to look at opportunities and gaps where they are. And again, with our statutory partners on the community plan, there's a need to work with our partners in regards to ensuring that we're planting on any available land that is not going to be used for development. In regards to climate change itself, and this is on the global context, climate change is a result of our current economic and industrial systems. Capitalism, by its very nature, requires minerals and natural resources. And when they are depleted, they move on to another natural resource and then deplete that also. So it's a model of government, or the model of society that we live in, that's causing a lot of these issues. The council can do a lot of things, but they can't do everything. And at times we do have to be, we certainly have to do a lot of the heavy lifting. But if you look at throughout the world, you know, the big players, they're going to reluctantly give up their power. You look at Saudi Arabia, you look at America or Russia or whatever, they're very unlikely to give up their stranglehold on resources. But moving forward, and it was touched upon by a couple of speakers in regards to the Green New Deal. It wasn't mentioned as the Green New Deal, but I remember being in the Assembly where we were pushing very hard along with a number of political parties and Friends of the Earth to introduce the Green New Deal. But it was blocked by the then Environment Minister, Sammy Wilson, who said there was no such thing as climate change. And it was made up. In regards to, we also looked for a Climate Change Act at that time. That's a considerable period of time ago, well over 12 years ago. And again, Sammy Wilson said there was no such thing as climate change. So I welcome Glenn, at least, waking up to the reality that there is climate change, and that we have to do. You represent the DUP in this chamber. But through the Green New Deal and retrofitting homes, you know, there's a great opportunity to create jobs, and particularly for our young people to create employment. And I brought it into the environmental thematic. The environmental thematic working group.
Tell us another couple of minutes yet. You're allowed 10 minutes.
I brought it in, and interruptions that should get a bit longer. Environmental thematic group, I brought in that we should have a local, you know, fit for purpose Green New Deal ourselves. And officers said it couldn't be done, you know, because there was no minister in place, you know. So these things can be revisited, sure. In regards to electric charging, yes, of course, there should be more electric charging points. And council across all statutory bodies and partners. But there's also then new technologies, the hydrogen fuel cells, which may be introduced into cars in the future. Because, as I said, the global powers are looking at change, and they want to be at the forefront of change. They want to make more money, and that's the very nature of capitalism, what they want to do. And so they may be working towards that also. As I said, we can't do this alone. If we look at central government, they need to drive it. if you look at some of the big companies, the rollout of Phoenix Gas, they're not going to end Phoenix or gas provision, and they're only putting stuff in. You know, so a lot of the issues will take longer to get to. One of the important thing that government could do, central government, would be free public transport for young people on public transport to shift young people away from the private car. So it's not a generational thing that you have to get a car. But if you look across the chamber here tonight, I'd say every one of us have travelled in a car. You know, so it's a massive shift that we have to do. But I'm certainly up for it.
I'll probably not start after the length of this meeting. Thanks, Chair. I'll not keep as long. I want to say that the SDLP are supporting, we support this motion, and I'm glad it's come to light in that aspect of it. I think it's what he has said there, I mean, climate change, I mean, it is a real issue, and it's been acknowledged by the majority of people. Even though we are a small part of the world, we still have an impact, and it's something we need to acknowledge. One of the issues that, as a council, we need to be looking at is the amount of energy consumption that is used, the awareness within our area. I think that's within our work environment, also within the local area, people that let them realise what energy they're using in that aspect. I think that needs to be highlighted. I would like to thank Councillor Brown for bringing the amendment. It was something that we were looking at aspect of it. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Councillor Brown for finally being steered by the SDLP. Thank you very much. There you go. That's all I have to say.
Thanks very much, David.
Chair, thanks very much. You actually stole my joke, Chair, but I said to the girls, the way this length of speeches were going, it might have been too late to do anything. It was about 20-30 fast approaching. But anyway, Chair, listen, very happy to support the motion. I know climate change is an issue that's to the forefront of everybody's mind at this stage, and whilst there can be some differing opinions on whether it exists or not, it's certainly something I have concerns about. And I think, you know, that we as a local council should try and take a lead in playing our part to try and mitigate any concerns that there is regarding climate change. And I thank Councillor Enright for bringing forward this motion. I know that he is very passionate about these type of issues, and certainly recognise that. And whilst there will be some difficult choices to make in terms of actually dealing with this as a council, and even costs associated with that, it's certainly something that we should do, particularly when we've seen many governments across the world not taking the issue seriously as they should. So I'm happy to support it, and I'm sure that the majority of the room will actually support the motion going forward.
Henry?
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. Chairman, the UK produces 1% of CO2 emissions in the whole world, 1%. And the UK is already working on becoming carbon neutral by 2030. But, Chairman, the thing that really surprises me is, why do we go on about what's happening here and ignoring the likes of India and China that are building 6 dirty coal-fired power stations a week between them to cater for their growing energy needs? And we seem to ignore what's going on the other side of the world and think that we can resolve this by putting up a few wind turbines. Councillor Brown referred to the wind turbine farm that was rightfully stopped by this council, given all the evidence that has been heard on it. Turbines that were being manufactured in China using precious metals that were mined from areas in China where people had been displaced to get at those minerals. Then they bring it back, they process it, and they ship it over here. It would, the amount of energy that some of those turbines would produce in their lifetime wouldn't even replace the amount of energy that was used in their manufacture. So a whole lot of this is a bluff, Chairman. And Chairman, you see now young people, young children who listen to the likes of Greta Thunberg, whatever you call her, and they're going into anxiety syndrome because they think they've no future. Chairman, there is going to be a future for our young people. Don't listen to this nonsense. Yes, it makes sense to recycle and do things that protect our environment, But you know, you get all these lovey-doveys and these middle-class people going on about we'll have to save the climate. But they've got their mobile phones, they've got their laptops, they've got their PlayStations, and then they've got their long-haul flights out to Bali or wherever it is to talk about saving the planet. It's a lot of nonsense, Chairman. Chairman, whenever I see some of these people walking to school instead of their mummies leaving them in their big four-wheel drive jeeps up to all the schools in Uri and Moore, and you see it every morning, then we'll maybe even take them seriously, Chairman.
There you go. Follow that. So we're all in agreement then? Sure, that's the last speaker, was it? Yeah, sum up. Yes, go ahead. 2 minutes.
Thanks, Chairperson. There's some hard concrete things we should be doing now. Welcome, will you suggest, and that we invite councils from around Europe who have actually delivered change in a best practice way and not just delivering us theory. We want to avoid useless reports clogging ourselves on this particular issue. I'd like to pull Liam up on his point with Councillor Brown. The Uri and Mourne and Down local development plan to 2030. Preferred options paper did indeed go out for consultation on June 2018, and it closed consultation on the 28th of August 2018. This is the only draft development plan we have for the next 10 years that's so far published. And it says there is no system-wide need for further renewable energy in the grid in our area. It mentions we've got 160 miles of coastline, but it doesn't mention the fact that the UK government has said we've got a metre of sea level rise to be dealt with. It says that in section 7.105 the council has no responsibility for electricity provision. This is highly questionable. Transport in this area has been electrified over the next 10 years. Already existing electricity production is being moved to renewable energy. And legacy fossil fuel heating must transition to electric or passive solar power. It's very much our business. But to finish anyway, I want to thank Henry for his opinions. And thank God that he isn't a minister like Sammy Wilson holding the same opinions that set Northern Ireland back in tackling these areas some 10 or 15 years. I note also that China now is installing more renewable energy every year than the rest of the world put together. They have more electric buses in China than they have in the rest of the world put together. And they have more people working in renewable energy in China than they have in the rest of the world put together. So it may well be that Henry's ideas may be slightly out of date and probably from a UKIP or one of the other parties that he favours rule book. Thank you.
I think there's enough wind in him to drive a turbine. Anyway, Henry, are you against the motion, Henry? Oh, my God. I go for it. All in favour, yes? Yeah. Item number, the next one is impending call from the European Union, that's Barra, which will be held at the ERT committee. It'll be heard, sorry, at the ERT committee. So Barra, just introduce the motion as it is there, please.
Good morning, Harley. This council recognises that economic future planning is crucial in the period ahead, particularly given the impending withdrawal from the European Union. This council should plan for and bring forward an economic plan for the future of this council area in the event of the North of Ireland retaining membership of the European Union following a referendum on Irish unity. The economic plan should draw on the numerous existing reports of an all-Ireland economy, including, but not limited to, Modelling Irish Unification by Dr. Kurt Kubner, The Economic Effect of an All-Ireland Economy by Paul Gosling, The Economic Case for Irish Unity by Michael Burke, and the Joint Oireachtas Committee report, Brexit and the Future of Ireland, Uniting Ireland and its People in Peace and Prosperity. This council should be prudent in planning for the future to maximise our potential and secure future economic growth and to compete effectively with other cities across the island of Ireland. The economic plan should examine how this council would prepare for this scenario and how this council area could position itself within this potential new constitutional arrangement in order that Uri, Mourne and Down District Council maximises all opportunities for city growth in this context. Cormorty.
Is there something for that? Okay. Next one is biodiversity and environmental protection, which will be heard at the Sustainable Working Group. Liz, you're proposing this to you. Would you read the motion as it is, please?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. We commend this Council for the work and projects it undertakes across the district to enhance biodiversity and increase environmental protection. Rewilding spaces in the heart of our communities not only enhances and adds to the good work already undertaken to protect the environment, but also confirms our commitment as a Council to challenge the climate emergency which we have already recognised is upon us. We call on this Council in each of the 7 DAs to rewild a minimum one extra space each year outside what is already planned or programmed. We further call on this Council to promote this initiative and working alongside members in each area to identify achievable and appropriate sites for working with the community. We create rewilded spaces where local communities can feel part of a challenging climate change. Thanks, Chair.
Next one is attacks on places of worship. David, this could be heard in Council of Holgate.
Thank you, Chair. Read out the motion. That this Council notes recently published research from the charity Care and I that found 445 attacks have been recorded on places of worship in Northern Ireland in just the last 3 years. Notes with concern that 35 of these despicable attacks were recorded in Uriemore and Down Policing District unreservedly condemns all attacks on places of worship, no matter what faith or denomination, and upholds the important human right for individuals to be free to worship and live out their faith in this society. This Council also notes the operation of the Places of Worship Security Scheme in England and Wales and expresses regret that a similar scheme is not available in Northern Ireland, and therefore agrees to write to the Department for Communities and the Northern Ireland Office calling for a swift introduction of a similar scheme locally. Chair, firstly, could I thank you for accepting this motion before us tonight. My party have brought forward this motion following on from a report that was published that outlined that places of worship across Northern Ireland have been subject to 445 criminal attacks over the last 3 years, which is obviously very concerning. And with that in mind, we believe measures should be implemented by government to offer support to Northern Ireland, similar to a scheme currently available in England and Wales. I think we can all agree that places of worship, no matter what faith or denomination, should be a cherished place of peace and sanctuary. They provide hope, emotional support and healing to communities, so it is totally demoralising that so many have been attacked in recent years. Attacking a church is an attack against its entire congregation, and while some attacks are acts of mindless vandalism, unfortunately in Northern Ireland the scourge of sectarianism remains, and this has been motivated behind many attacks on local churches across the country. Under the UK Government's Hate Crime Action Plan, funding is available to fund additional security measures for places of worship, but at this time this is only available in England and Wales. My party believes it is now the time that this protection was extended to premises and faiths in Northern Ireland. Whilst all crimes motivated by hate are particularly despicable, and perpetrators of them must be pursued and detained, as a society we should also be ensuring that churches have the means and the support they require to protect themselves from attack. And in doing so, my party believes that the provision of support similar to that offered in England and Wales could be a suitable way of offering assistance to local churches. As such, we would ask the Council members present to support our motion before the Council tonight, which requests that the Department of Communities and Northern Ireland Office consider provisions of such a scheme similar to that offered in GB.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. And I will second Councillor Taylor's notice of motion because, as one who faithfully attends my place of worship, I will echo the words of the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, that places of worship are at the heart of our communities and should provide peace and sanctuary. Place of Worship Protective Security Funding Scheme is now worth $1.6 billion in the last round of funding. This can provide for installation of alarms, security lighting and access controls. $5 million of this fund provides for security training. It is unfortunate that this funding does not benefit places of worship in Northern Ireland, at present only in England and Wales. Last year, Northern Ireland places of worship fell victim to 147 criminal attacks, with Uriemore and Down Council area having the largest of all the council areas increase on the previous years. Not only is such attacks appalling on places of worship, but also against individuals who may have presented an item, should it be structured or ornamental, as a memorial to a loved one. This can be very distressing. I too call for swift introduction of a similar scheme locally. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Chair, thank you very much. And Councillor Taylor, thank you very much for bringing the motion. Our party will be supporting it. And I think it's alarming, the figures we've heard there from Councillor Taylor in relation to church property being attacked, in that I've always said it's wrong, shouldn't happen, so it shouldn't. And any support that we can give as a council, we should. No one should touch any church property. A number of years ago, Killay, a lot of church properties was attacked in Killay, and I have to say there was one good thing, was that it wasn't sectarian. It was thugs, young thugs, thought it would be funny to smash windows and desecrate graves and that. It's wrong. Should never happen. And maybe I think this is an item too, Councillor Taylor, that should be raised at the PCSP. Maybe Councillor Lewis would bring that there forward, and I will certainly support him when it comes to the PCSP, because we need to nip this in the bud. We need to have these attacks stopping. And as you said, Councillor Taylor, an attack on a church, chapel, whatever, is an attack on that whole community. So it is. You're not just attacking that particular church, you're attacking every person that attends it, every parishioner. And we have to send out a message that this type of behaviour is not wanted in Newry Morning Down. So we support the motion.
Sorry.
Yes, I agree with everything said there. Definitely, Sinn Féin supports this motion without a doubt. But we would just like to mention other religious groups who tend to be forgot about. On August 3rd, 2017, a pig's head was left at the door of a mosque in Euston Nards, and graffiti was painted on the walls. Also, a number of Jewish graves were damaged as headstones were smashed and knocked the same year. Sinn Féin condemns all attacks of vandalism and slicing graves of worship. Definitely.
Sorry, before I pick you, Arian, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just pointing out to you. I understand that. Yeah, but sometimes these faiths can be. You don't have the same support as a Christian faith, you know. So sometimes you get left behind a wee bit, Jewish and Muslim.
Okay, points well made, Jerry. Gary.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank David for bringing the motion and offer our party support, Chair. Chair, there are two churches that are very close to where I live. One of them was attacked again back in late March of this year. The First Presbyterian Church non-subscribing. Myself and Councillor Salvage did time go and visit some of our friends who will be elders in the church, sir. And it was an absolute disgraceful attack, sir, on a building that was built in Uri in 1853, sir. It stood a beautiful building where, for the second time, a stained glass window was smashed, and you know, and the thing is, the window has since been repaired. It's been repaired for a second time. And you do stand there, Chair. I mean, it's, you know, with many beautiful buildings in Newry, but that church in particular stands out and very prominent where it is on the corner of William Street. You do wonder what goes through people's minds when they do such a thing. I would say, though, Chair, it was when we were standing there along with elders of the church. Funny, it was the same day we nominated for the election. I do remember we were there in the morning. And a little bit of time, I just happened to be passing and seen a group of us standing in the grounds of the church, stopped and made a substantial donation on the spot to the elders of the church. So these people who carry out this do not represent the community. These churches are the fabric of all our towns and villages. They belong to all of us, and we should cherish them. And I thank David again for bringing the motion. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with all of what's been said so far. Twice this summer, the chapel in Newtown was broken into and damaged. The first time, a stained glass window must be 100 years old, was broken. Someone just fired through it so that they could get in. They thought they'd get in and rob all around them. They were disturbed, thankfully. And the second time they got in, they tried to take the money out of the candle stand, and they pulled it over, chipping the marble floor and that. So I totally agree. It's an attack on the whole congregation, and the people that go and clean the chapel up and set the altar and get everything right and keep the place right, and that's an insult and a crime against everyone in the congregation. So yeah, I was delighted to see Davey bringing this here tonight, and just like Jerry and the rest of the party will support it.
Andy?
Thank you, Chair. Yep. Again, just echoing a lot of what has been said, but certainly my experience, you know, from attending different denominations and different types of faith, it does plays up a role within the community. In fact, just reading that CARE report, I noticed that it was actually the same to the Old Presbyterian Church, which was suffered to arson attacks last summer where I attended a youth club. And so just, you know, the whole role, again, we talked about childcare, and again, the mother and tots, it's all about a lot of churches, are, you know, in integral, you know, and right across, in Castlewell, the mother and tots there goes right across the town. So it's so important. And again, you know, the freedom to practice faith is an integral human right. Again, just touching on what Davey said as well, that the scheme that is mentioned does cut across all faiths, as he quite rightly said, and that is incredibly important as well. Thank you, Councillor Turner. Sure.
David, do you want to sum up?
Sure, yes, I'll be brief. Just want to thank everybody for offering support to this motion. We felt it was important to bring to the council for discussion. And Gary and Barrett mentioned specific cases that, you know, I was aware of. One in Uri that, you know, I visited myself, and I was aware also of the one in Newtown. And in both those cases, actually, at a time that, you know, would have been a great hurt caused to congregations, it was great to see that local communities of all backgrounds came together to show support to those churches. In terms of both cases, I'm aware of that, and that was very welcome to see that when something like this, something awful like this does happen, that it actually does bring communities together to show support to people of different faiths. So I certainly hope, you know, we can get a positive reaction from the departments on this, but we await their response in due course. Thank you.
Thanks very much, David. All agreement then, yes? Okay. Thank you. The next one is the early diagnosis of bowel and breast cancer, and this was due to be heard tonight. John, Councillor John Taylor and Councillor Una Hanlon.
Chair, probably in proposing this, I wanted to say that it is a joint motion, even though it's proposing it now. This council notes that early diagnosis of bowel and breast cancer offers patients the best chance of successful treatment. England, Scotland, Wales and the Republic of Ireland all currently use the fecal immunochemical test and have a lower age for screening. NHS England are currently trialling breast cancer screening at the lower age of 47 and the upper age of 72. This council will write to the Permanent Secretary for Health, Mr. Richard Pingali, highlighting the difference in the screening service provision across the UK and Ireland, and calling for a review into bowel cancer screening services in the north, and to follow the English NHS lead in trialling breast cancer screening at a lower age here in Northern Ireland. The council will write to the 10 other councils requesting that they join Miriam One and Down District Council in calling on the Permanent Secretary to commit to a review of bowel and breast screening as outlined. Chairperson, first of all, I'd like to pay tribute to the Down Community Health Committee, because this is an issue that was raised at their meeting in September. And it would be wrong not to mention them, not to make tribute to them, because they have, for the last 2 to 3 decades, been at the forefront of all health-related campaigns, and certainly in the Down area, and not just relating to the hospital facilities, but relating to health service provision in general. The second thing I want to raise before going into the actual nature of the motion is that this is a cross-party motion. And I think it's incumbent, though, that it's a cross-party motion, because health is one of those issues that no matter what it is to do with health, when it comes to this chamber, I'm glad to say that over the last 3-4 years I've been here, there's been no qualms, there's been no objections. People have been looking at the health of our people, and have been looking to be proactive in ensuring that we have the best possible medical services available to them. Cancer affects all of us at some point in our lives, whether it be a family member, a friend, or even ourselves. On the NHS website, it is stated that 1 in 2 people will develop some form of cancer during their lifetime. There are over 200 different types of cancer, and like any disease, they have varying impacts on us, arrangements of Arda. They also have been diagnosed and treated in many different ways, but what is important is that some cancers can and should be diagnosed at the earliest point so that there is the greatest chance of successful treatment. This evening, myself and Councillor Hannan are raising two of the most common types of cancer that affect people here in the North, bowel and breast cancer. Now, I'll be focusing on the issues around bowel cancer and the need for change in screening for it, and Councillor Hannan will be highlighting and giving greater detail on breast cancer and why we believe screening needs to change regarding this. In Northern Ireland, around 1,200 men and women are diagnosed with bowel cancer every year, making it the second most common cancer. It is also the second most common cause of cancer death, with about 420 deaths each year. Breast cancer accounts for 30% of all cancer in women in Northern Ireland, and about 1 in 8 women are diagnosed with breast cancer during their lifetime. Both of these cancers are treatable if caught at an early stage, and the chances of survival are more positive. For bowel cancer, we are looking for two very important changes. That is, the age in which home screening can take place via our health service, and the type of test used for screening. Northern Ireland is the only area within the UK and Ireland that does not use fecal immunochemical testing, even though the UK National Screening Committee has made recommendations that FIT be used. We still use a fecal occult blood test, even with such recommendations and changes in other areas. FOBT requires you to take two samples of stool on three separate occasions. This means that to take the test, a person has to store this test kit along with specimens for a number of days, whereas FIT is one sample on one occasion. Having to store the FOBT kit has been suggested as being a reason why there hasn't been a greater uptick in people using it. It has been suggested that the single sample nature of FIT has increased uptick in testing in highlighted areas of England and Scotland. Another important reason for introducing FIT is that this process only detects human blood and stool, whereas the present process detects all blood types and stool. FIT is seen as more effective detecting more positive results and showing less false negative results as a result of this. And for anyone who may not know what a false negative result is, it's a result that has come back as negative, but it may be positive. We're also looking for the screening age for home screening tests to be made available to the lowered age of 50 rather than 60, in line with other areas of the UK, as evidence shows that screening people at a younger age would allow more bowel cancer to be picked up at an earlier stage. And as previously stated, if bowel cancer is picked up at an earlier stage, it is more likely that a patient can receive successful treatment, given a greater chance of surviving. It is imperative that the Permanent Secretary brings forward proposals to lower the screening age and change the type of home test used for bowel cancer, as has been done in England, Scotland, Wales and the Republic of Ireland. Living in Northern Ireland should not mean we are part of a postcode lottery for quality health service provision. If such a change in the screening process can contribute to lowering the number of deaths each year due to bowel cancer, then that would be worth any cost incurred in such a change provision. And I will probably get rapped for this, but if the Permanent Secretary were not to bring forward such a change, I would certainly see it as a dereliction of his duty.
Thanks for that, John. I would definitely echo Councillor Trainor's comments, and I think this is an important motion that needed to be brought forward to the Council. I too would pay tribute to the Down Health Committee for highlighting it to ourselves. They did come to us about the bowel screening, but we decided to sort of open it out a wee bit more. As John said, you know, there's not many of us that haven't been touched by cancer, either ourselves or with family members and friends. I myself have had two close friends very recently diagnosed and come through treatment who are outside the ages of the screening, so it was something that I wanted to highlight in the Chamber. As we all know, breast cancer is the second most common type of cancer among women in the North. There is a good chance of recovery if it is detected in an early stage. We only have to look at and observe the success of the Action Cancer Bus and the Action Cancer Charity, which is always fully booked when it's brought into the rural locations, which just shows you how important it is, you know, for women to be screened and have that peace of mind. It does provide screening service for ladies who fall outside the NHS guidelines. For many, it's been a life-saving appointment, and for others, it just gives peace of mind that changes can be detected over the difference in appointments. NHS England are trialling the effectiveness of offering women one extra screening between the ages of 47 and 49 and 71 and 75. Screening cannot be a postcode lottery, and I believe screening should be uniform throughout.
The fact that the NHS England recognised the need to trial lower screening aids just highlights the need for this to be rolled out here in the north also. Thanks.
John.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the members for bringing this motion, particularly when it's the Bowel and Breast Awareness Month. And I would just like to add to the motion that, you know, as public representatives, we can be the voice of the public, and I think it's a responsibility not only to bring motions like this into our chamber, but also to bring information that we avail of to members of the public. And just I would like to highlight that the Public Health Agency are currently providing free programmes which will do cervical and breast screening, and also in the bowel, to let anybody who wants to avail of that through local hard-hitting groups. So the symptoms, what you can do about it, who you go and see about it, what the test would entail for anybody going on to the programme. And it all backs on to early diagnosis and the awareness of the symptoms, and to give everybody a chance. And if people could bring that to their local community groups, that if they contact Catherine Robinson through the Public Health Agency, you know, if this motion comes tonight highlighting it saves one life because of early detection, that's good enough for me. So I'd like to thank the members for bringing it. And as I say, if we can let hard-hitting groups know that free programme is available, I've already organised events around Ballyhole and Hilltown, Warrenpoint and Restrever. So, I mean, it's there for people to be able to organise that. Thank you.
No more. John, do you want to come up then? I don't think there's anybody else indicating, or is it? No?
Chair, I think that it's been very well said, you know, what the issues are here, what we're asking for, and I thank Karen actually for making us aware of that scheme that's coming through the Public Health Agency, and possibly something that we should pursue within our DEA.
All agree then? Councillors, yes? Next one is Climate Change Action Plan, Islands Park, Newcastle, to be heard here, and Councillor Willie Clark?
It's going to committee.
Oh, sorry. You read it out anyway, yep.
Yeah.
So the working group.
This council recognises the significant impact that climate change will have on our communities. Council agrees to manage Islands Park, Newcastle as a climate change park to support climate change mitigation and adaptation. Council will develop an action plan which will prioritise a number of exemplar projects, including eco-friendly replacement of car parks, permeable pavements, further recycling, wildflower meadows for pollinator bees and butterflies, establishment of a wetlands habitat, planting of a native fruit orchard, and green transport connectivity.
Have you got a second for that? Second for me. Thank you very much for that. Next one is, which will be heard here now, abortion laws. Councillor, are you ready?
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, the motion that I had submitted, I'm just trying to get back up here to it, that this council opposes the imposition of laws on the introduction of laissez-faire human abortion into Northern Ireland. Now, after discussion with some of our councillors, it will now form a composite motion which will read that this council expresses its deep concern at the decision by Westminster to effectively extend the 1960 Abortion Act to Northern Ireland against the wishes of the people of Northern Ireland and their elected representatives. Notes, the sensitivity and complexity of this issue acknowledges the need for sensitive consideration that deals with difficult cases and offers support to women in crisis pregnancies, and instructs the Chief Executive to write to the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland requesting that he ensures no legislative changes on abortion be considered until the Northern Ireland Assembly is restored. Chairman, just for speak as briefly as I can on it, I know it is a very, very sensitive subject, and as a man, I would never condemn or judge a woman who has maybe found herself in difficult situations in the past, but as a father, it's just something that resonates with me, that babies are such a precious thing to have. But if Westminster gets its way on October the 22nd, the underpinning law on abortion here will be repealed. Every explicit legal protection will be removed from every unborn baby up to 28 weeks in the womb. Abortions will be permitted up to at least viability around 23, 24 weeks and up to birth for babies with disabilities. There are no protections which would prevent abortion because the baby is a girl and the couple wanted a boy. That's how radical a change this is from what we have at present. This will introduce a new and radical laissez-faire abortion regime. And Chairman, I deliberately use that word laissez-faire because it is a free-for-all within, and especially in the 5 months between the legislation being introduced here and it getting its proper approvals 5 months later in Westminster. It would be the first time in Northern Ireland babies with disabilities will lose their pre-birth protection. In England and Wales, where Down syndrome is detected in the womb, up to 90% of babies are aborted. Abortion would also be legal for minor defects like clipped, cleft, lip or palate. However, if this new abortion regime is introduced, the reality is that most babies would be aborted because they are unplanned and unwanted, and not because of hard cases so often cited in the media, like incest and rape and that type of thing. From Department of Health statistics for 2018 in England and Wales, we know that for every 4 children born, 1 is aborted, and that 98% of abortions involve physically healthy women aborting physically healthy babies. It was done for therapeutic reasons, for convenience, which it would literally make you cry, Chairman. If the law on abortion is repealed on October 22, there will be a legal vacuum for 5 months until March the 31st, 2020. There will be no legislation and no statutory regulatory framework for abortion provision. And this is causing a lot of concern for our health workers, nurses, doctors, all people throughout the whole NHS system within Northern Ireland who are extremely concerned about that. The vacuum is very concerning in itself, but if regulations and guidelines are eventually introduced, they cannot provide the same protections as the criminal law when it comes to protecting women in pregnancy and unborn babies from other people or unsafe and unscrupulous abortion providers. There will be no law governing where, how, or in what circumstances an abortion can take place. No requirement to keep records. Government has said it will introduce guidance. Guidance is not law and does not provide legal protection. As a local midwife put it, she will be expected to treat one unborn child as the most precious gift in the world and discard another unborn child like clinical waste that can be left to die in a waste bin. Human life will be utterly dependent on human want, which is wrong. Pain-capable babies will be denied pain relief. This is extremely liberal abortion law. It is a direct attack on democracy, on the sanctity and inviolability of human life itself, on the right to protection of the most vulnerable human being, the human being in the womb. It is of a different order from other issues. The place for those matters to be resolved and decided upon is here in Northern Ireland, in our Assembly and nowhere else, with MLEs free to vote according to conscience. Every Northern Ireland, we will have no say in critical issues such as time limits, reason for abortion, provision of the protection of the life of the unborn baby, or provision for a conscientious objection for our doctors and nurses and pharmacists. There will be no opportunity to put arguments of any kind about how medicine and our understanding of life in the womb has developed in the 52 years since abortion was introduced in Great Britain. The regulations will have to be either approved by Westminster within the 28 days or rejected. They cannot be changed. Their content cannot be challenged. This is a double denial of our democratic rights as a people of Northern Ireland, and we must oppose it ferociously. And Chairman, one thing I will say, there's many things in this country that divide us. Politics can be orange and green. On this issue, I don't know how people found out about it, but the number of calls that I got from across the community, Catholics, Protestants, ministers, priests, you name it, and they do not want this legislation imposed on us, and I respectfully ask this council to support this legislation. Thank you.
And could you just call out your composite motion again. You've changed the wording. Can I have one of those again, please?
But this council expresses the deep concern of the decision by Westminster to effectively extend the 1960 Abortion Act against the wishes of the people of Northern Ireland and their elected representatives. Notes the sensitivity and complexity of this issue, acknowledges the need for sensitive consideration that deals with difficult cases and offers support to women in crisis pregnancy, and instructs the Chief Executive to write to the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland requesting that he ensures no legislative changes on abortion can be considered until the Northern Ireland Assembly is restored.
We got a second of that before taking the next speaker. Michael, go ahead.
Yes, Chair, and I'd like to thank Councillor Reilly for taking what was effectively an SDLP amendment to his original motion. And Chair, before I start, I would just like to point out that I believe that this is an all-encompassing motion that does take on board a lot of the concerns of all the political parties in the North in relation to the impact that the 1967 Act, which is effectively what would be introduced on the 22nd of October, would have on the health system here and on mothers who are in crisis pregnancies, mothers who aren't in crisis pregnancies, and also to doctors, medical practitioners and family members. Chair, this is a very emotive and sensitive issue. I have no doubt there are varying opinions in this room. Every one of those opinions have been shaped by experience. Mine has been shaped by my own personal experience, and that my first son and only son was born after 25 and a half weeks gestation. He had a 20% survival chance, and the staff who looked after him in the Royal Neonatal Unit and subsequently in Daisy Hill's Excellent Special Care Baby Unit were trained to save his life and to fight for his life. And I believe that if we go down the route of what's coming down the line from Westminster in just over 2 weeks' time, those people will have to be retrained on how to deal with babies that will have to be terminated. My son was perfectly formed. He fought for life and fought valiantly, and I'm delighted to say in 3 weeks' time, at 6'2", he'd be graduating from university in Liverpool. And he's a walking miracle, isn't he, out of me and his mother. His two daughters that followed him didn't have the same experience, but we're delighted to have them as well sometimes. But that said, Chair, you know, this is a very serious position. A very serious position whereby I believe we need to appeal to the two biggest parties who have their hands on the switch at Stormont. There's no issue bigger, I think, at the minute to look after the most vulnerable people in our society, those who don't have a voice, the unborn, and those mothers who are in serious crisis pregnancy. And while my personal experience has shaped me to be somebody who is pro-life in their thinking, I'm deeply compassionate about the issues that face women in crisis pregnancy. Should they be of a fetal fable or abnormality nature that's referred to by some medical practitioners and not by others, and also in relation to potential sex crime, incest or rape. Those are hugely difficult issues to resolve in any society. But what I can say is this, as those experiences have shaped me and shaped other people in this room, the experiences that we are getting from Westminster MPs, those who take their seats from Britain, is shaped on their experiences of the last 52 years of having the 1967 Abortion Act, a very liberalised society which has resulted effectively in abortion on demand. And I don't believe there's anybody in this room believes that abortion on demand is something we want to introduce overnight in Northern Ireland. Our society is not fit for it, our society is not prepared for it, and our society, I don't think, is particularly fond of that idea. What I can say is, for those who call themselves progressive parties, is to think twice about what needs to be done. I think if there's one issue whereby the two major parties could have put their differences aside, even to go in on a temporary basis, to avert this crisis that's coming down the line. Thousands of people walked on Stormont over the last number of weeks, from all backgrounds, as outlined by Councillor Reilly. And they walked together because they wanted to give a voice to the unborn child, and also to show compassion for those women in crisis pregnancies. Compassion which also needs to be legislated for, and as we have passed in this chamber previously, where we provide prenatal care and we provide multiple choices for those women who want the choice. Not just the choice of either to terminate or not to terminate. What I would also say, Chair, is that when we go back to Stormont and we discuss Stormont, there was excellent work done. And I believe at the time it might have been the Alliance Minister at the time, David Ford, spearheaded that work. And I would call on his party and others to consider this motion that's been put forward tonight, because what it does do is to protect the rights of those vulnerable women as well as the rights of the unborn child. What I would say to this is that great work was done where effectively those of us who are politicians that don't have to live and work at the coalface of this problem, be they medical practitioners or be they legal practitioners, that we were putting the legislation, the Northern Ireland based and the Northern Ireland honed legislation, at the hands of those medical and legal practitioners, the people who had to make the difficult decisions with no legislative backup or no medical or political or legislative cover. And what I would ask tonight, Chair, is that we send out a message that no, we don't want the 1967 Act here, that we want to get Stormont back, and I would urge the political parties around the table here to move on that as soon as they possibly can. But on the basis that that is unlikely, and I'm a political realist, and I understand the difficulties that they have, though I believe that other issues that they're hung up on aren't nowhere near as important as this one, I would ask them to join us tonight in asking the Chief Executive to write the Secretary of State to Northern Ireland and ask what this motion does, which is to effectively take the action to prevent any further abortion legislation to come in here until the work that was carried out by the Assembly and the previous legislative members of that, legislators of that Assembly, get back to the work that was set out and been mapped out by the medical practitioners and people that we as a party had engaged with wholeheartedly and opened our minds to in relation to the potential problems faced by women in crisis pregnancies. And I would ask you all to consider seriously what I believe is an all-encompassing motion that takes on board the need for a voice for the unborn, but also takes on board compassionately the needs of women in harrowing situations and crisis pregnancies. And Chair, I believe that this motion does that, and I would ask all members to support it tonight in sending that letter from behalf of this Council to the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, that we make the decision here that impacts the unborn children that are waiting to be born here in Northern Ireland and protects the mothers who are carrying those children and those mothers in harrowing pregnancies. Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to second the motion.
Carl.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It is with a heavy heart that I humbly speak on Councillor Riley's notice of motion tonight. In the absence of a Stormont government, Westminster imposes abortion without consultation or consideration given to those who disagree with abortion. 100,000 lives have been saved because Northern Ireland didn't implement the 1967 Abortion Act. 1,053 babies were aborted last year by women resident in Northern Ireland. All but 23 babies were aborted outside of Northern Ireland, 23 being the number of women at risk of giving birth. There has been an increase of Northern Ireland abortions since the NHS introduced funding abortions for residents of Northern Ireland. 295 babies were aborted in England in 2018. We cannot sit idly by and allow this carnage to happen. There are those who rejoiced in the ruling of the Supreme Court in the Sarah York case that Northern Ireland laws are contrary to human rights. Does the unborn not deserve the same human rights? Some may say that the unborn is not alive. Well, the unborn is alive because it has a functioning heart. And in order to carry out vacuum aspiration, dilatation and evacuation, the heart must be stopped. At 22 weeks, an unborn baby will have a feticide injection which will be injected into the baby's live, functioning heart, which will in hours destroy the fetus. There are many healthcare professionals who are opposed to such abortions. Indeed, they would say it is the unjust and violent taking of a human life. Fellow councillors and colleagues, later there will be a vote taken. This is without a doubt one of the most serious notice of motion to come before this council. It is too serious to look over one's shoulder to view a party stance on this subject. Search your heart and vote with your conscience. This can be stopped by an emergency sitting of all parties in Stormont before the 21st of October. Tonight you can take that stand. and in doing so remember the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. The Ulster Unionist Newry Mourne Down councillors support this motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're very good. Patrick.
Thanks, Chair. Start by saying I think it's very disappointing that it's a bunch of men commenting on what is fundamentally a woman's rights issue. I conclude myself in that. I welcome the fact that Councillor Howell has her light on. Very much welcome your contribution. I think it's important to have that perspective. I think it's very disappointing. As we've seen from last week's High Court ruling, Northern Ireland's current law on this issue is incompatible with human rights legislation. It's as simple as that, and anyone with respect for the rule of law should be cognizant of that fact. Our abortion law here is more restrictive than Saudi Arabia, Iran, Algeria, and is an embarrassment to all of us, making us look like a narrow-minded conservative backwater and not the forward-looking progressive region we should aspire to be. I'd like to ask the SDLP, how can a party that professes to be the party of civil rights not respect women's rights and the right to bodily autonomy? Not only is the current law a breach of human rights, it is discrimination in that it denies equality of access to healthcare, which is available in the rest of the UK and Ireland. How can a unionist not support the healthcare laws in the rest of the UK? I'd like to note that not even Alliance for Choice, Northern Ireland's main abortion rights group, are calling for terminations up to 28 weeks, as Councillor Riley suggests. In fact, 80% of abortions happen under 9 weeks gestation and 90% under 12 weeks. And that if this legislation does come in, the upper limit would be no more than 24 weeks gestation. Therefore, I would like to submit an amendment welcoming any changes which bring Northern Ireland into line with international human rights standards and provide equal access to reproductive health care for pregnant people. But it notes that this is primarily a matter for a reformed assembly.
Second, we need a second for that, obviously. Have we got second by Andy? You accept that, Henry? I will let Roisin have her speak and then we'll probably have to decide on that then.
Sinn Féin, thanks, Chair. Sinn Féin was going to propose an amendment as well. Will I read it out now at this point?
Yeah, we're going to take one at a time, one amendment at a time. What's your point of order, Lynn? Yes, John.
I need to look at this.
I think we need to adjourn for 5 minutes. Take a comfort break.
I need to check the news and listen.
5 minutes comfort break.
Okay, so dealing with the point of order raised by Councillor Clark regarding Councillor Riley's amended motion was as amended from the motion that was tabled on the papers tonight. So that was in 19.2. A member may alter a motion of which he or she has given notice as proposed with the consent of the meeting. The meeting's consent will be signified without discussion. So there has been a discussion on it. We need to get agreement on the motions being amended. Councillor, I spoke to Councillor Clark outside and spoke to Councillor Riley. Councillor Clark, my understanding, if you get a copy of the motion, then you're content to let the discussion go on the motion. And Sarah's going to email that to all members now, so you should all have a copy of that motion now. So with the meeting but then is consented to the amended motion. Okay? That's all right. So then, Chairman, we're dealing with Patrick Brown's amendment, which maybe Patrick Brown maybe could let us know what the amendment is. Have you got a share, so maybe you can read it out.
Welcoming any changes which bring Northern Ireland into line with international human rights standards and provide equal access to reproductive health care for pregnant people, but notes this is primarily a matter for a reformed assembly.
So, any further discussion on that amendment before you move it on?
I don't think we'll have anybody indicating to speak on that. No, I'm happy enough to take a vote on it now.
Savage wants to come in.
Chair, just on that point, I think that just to recap on what I said, I believe the original motion encapsulated a lot of the sentiment that Councillor Byrne has echoed. I think we're all in agreement that we prefer a Northern Ireland Assembly to do that, and the very fact that we're asking the Northern Ireland Secretary of State to pull the plug on any move from Westminster on the issue until it's resolved by the Northern Ireland Assembly, I think covers that base. Thanks, Chair.
Right, still dealing with Councillor Brown's amendment.
So, for the amendment, Sarah's getting to the court of vote yet, so untrue.
Councillor Andrews is absent, Councillor Brown. Councillor Burgess is absent, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Casey?
Yes.
Councillor Clark? Yes. Councillor Kern? Yes. Councillor Devlin is absent, Councillor Dorn? Yes. Councillor Enright is absent, Councillor Gallagher? Yes. Councillor Gibbons? Yes. Councillor Hanlon? Yes. Councillor Hannah? Yes. Councillor Hart is absent, Councillor Hardy? Councillor Howell, Councillor Kinnan is absent, Councillor Larkin is absent, Councillor Lewis is absent, Councillor McGuinness, Councillor Malone, yes. Councillor Mason, Councillor McAteer, yes. Councillor McAvoy, Councillor McKee, yes. Councillor McKevitt, yes. Councillor McMurray, yes. Councillor Mulgrew is absent, Councillor O'Hara, yes. Councillor Murray, Councillor Riley, yes. Councillor Rowan, yes. Councillor Savage, yes. Councillor Sharvin is absent, Councillor Stokes, yes. Councillor Taylor, yes. Councillor Tinley is absent, Councillor Traynor, okay. Councillor Walker is absent. That's 2, 4, and 26 against. And no abstentions.
And it's lost. Rushing.
Okay, so this council, that's my proposed amendment, okay. This council regrets the Assembly is not in place to provide modern health care for women, including terminations where a woman's life, health, or mental health is at risk, and in cases of fatal abnormality and sexual crime. Council recognises that this is not possible to legislate for abortion in the case of rape in a compassionate way. Council accepts that termination without specific indication should be available for a limited gestational period through a GP-led service in a clinical context. Council also calls for British legislation which criminalises women who have had an abortion to be repealed immediately.
Yeah.
I just want to comment on Councillor Brown's point.
Are you seconding the amendment? Right. We need a vote on that then as well now.
I'll vote again, Chairman. Chairman, I can't accept that amendment because it's gone too far.
Right, so, Chair, it's in your hands. Recorded vote again.
Seconded then for Councillor Hanlon?
It is, Councillor Hanlon seconded. Do you need to read it out again?
Sorry, Chair, I'm just checking in terms of the amendment. Is that an amendment to Councillor Riley? So it ties into it. So I suppose exactly what is the amendment Councillor Riley's motion is about? It can't be a direct negative. That's the issue. So it has to be amendment to what Councillor Riley's saying. So Chairman, maybe if we read out Councillor Reilly's motion, then we can get clarification on the amendment. So have you got... Okay, maybe can you read it out then, Sarah?
Yeah. That this council expresses its deep concern at the decision by Westminster to effectively extend the 1967 Abortion Act to Northern Ireland against the wishes of the people of Northern Ireland and their elected representatives, notes the sensitivity and complexity of this issue, acknowledges the need for sensitive consideration that deals with difficult cases, and offers support to women in crisis pregnancies, and instructs the Chief Executive to write to the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland requesting that he ensures no legislative changes on abortion be considered until the Northern Ireland Assembly is restored.
So, amendment, Henry.
Just, Chairman, it's just clarification. I guess saying what you're doing is broadening the difficult cases. We can take it as an amendment. Well, it can be voted on as an amendment because it's an adaption to what Councillor. Sure. That's the only part of it you're changing.
Sure, I see it. I read it as a direct negative as well, Chair. Sure. With all due respect.
Chairman, it really sounds stupid, right?
Would the Councillor accept removal of the wording where it says in crisis pregnancies? See it where the last, where the third last line?
Yeah, from that down, remove and then our amendment puts in at that.
So you're removing in crisis pregnancies? And Henry's? What?
No,
what are we removing?
All the wordings.
All the wordings.
From crisis pregnancies.
Offer support to women, full stop.
And then our motion.
And then our motion.
Is.
Our amendment.
Your amendment.
Can you make that out then for us? That's what we're doing.
We're trying to do.
Chairman, we're trying to get the, trying to see what the reading, if we do the changing into it.
So that this council expresses a deep concern at the decision by Westminster to effectively extend the 1967 Abortion Act to Northern Ireland against the wishes of the people of Northern Ireland and their elected representatives, notes the sensitivity and complexity of this issue, acknowledges the need for sensitive consideration that deals with difficult cases, that this council regrets that the Assembly is not in place to provide modern health care for women, including terminations where a woman's life, health or mental health is at risk and in cases of fetal abnormality and sexual crime. Council recognises that it is not possible to legislate for abortion in the case of rape in a compassionate way. Council accepts that termination without specific indication should be available for a limited gestational period through a GP-led service in a clinical context. Council also calls for British legislation which criminalises women who have an abortion to be repealed immediately.
I'm happy with that.
That's the motion as amended. So you need to take that, Chairman. Councillor Reilly's not accepting it.
Sure. Right, take a vote on it.
Okay, so part of those.
Yeah, so for the mandation then between.
And you're looking in?
Yeah, we've done we've been through the part of those,
right? Chair. Can we get clarity on, because see when you read the second part of it, especially when you're talking about an indefinite period. That is a direct negative, with the greatest respect. It really is a direct negative. You're talking about legislating, not legislating. And
I'm happy enough with Pete anyway and taking it now.
I'm talking about legislating.
And it sends out a confusing message to the public.
Yeah.
Okay, Councillor Andrews is absent. Councillor Brown? Councillor Burgess is absent. Councillor Byrne? Councillor Casey?
Four.
Councillor Clark?
Four.
Councillor Kern? Councillor Devlin is absent. Councillor Dorn? Councillor Enright is absent. Councillor Gallagher?
Yes.
Councillor Gibbons?
Yes.
Councillor Hanlon?
Yes.
Councillor Hannah?
Yes.
Councillor Hart is absent. Councillor Hardy?
Four.
Councillor Howell?
Four.
Councillor Kimmins is absent. Councillor Larkin is absent. Councillor Lewis is absent. Councillor McGuinness?
Yes.
Councillor Malone?
Yes.
Councillor Mason?
Yes.
Councillor McAteer?
Yes.
Councillor McAvoy?
Yes.
Councillor McKee? Councillor McKevitt? Councillor McMurray? Councillor Mulgrey is absent. Councillor O'Hare? Councillor O'Murray? Councillor Riley? Councillor Rowan? Councillor Savage? Councillor Sharvin is absent. Councillor Stokes? Councillor Taylor? Councillor Tinley is absent. Councillor Traynor? Councillor Walker is absent. So it's 14-4 and 14 against.
I'm for.
So the chairman uses the cast in the vote.
I just say a few remarks.
Sure.
So this debate has obviously been very sensitive, and I recognise that there's opposing and strongly held views on the issue. There is an urgent need for the reform of current legislation on abortion because it is incompatible with human rights requirements. Legislators have a duty to act in the interest of all citizens, whatever their own personal views and beliefs. There is an urgent need for the reform of current legislation on abortion because it is incompatible. Sorry, I'm reading the same thing again. Because current legislation is failing women in the North, Sinn Féin supports legislative change and the provision of appropriate, modern and compassionate healthcare services for women across the island. Sinn Féin believes that all outstanding rights issues in the North of Ireland should be properly dealt with, not at Westminster, but by locally accountable politicians in the Assembly. Sinn Féin's focus in the current talk process is to get the political institutions up and running based on equality, rights and respect, so that we can address all these important issues. The DUP's anti-equality agenda is the only obstacle to this. Sinn Féin is opposed to the extension of Britain's 1967 Act to the North and believes that British legislation which criminalises women who have an abortion should be repealed immediately. We should never judge a woman, and no one knows what they will do if they're faced in that situation. Everyone has a story, and it deserves to be listened to.
Thanks very much for that. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Very much echo Councillor Howell's comments, and I just want to go back to Councillor Brown. He's not here to listen to me now. His point of women not speaking in the chamber on this issue, I take great offence at. This is a really emotive issue, especially for women. You know, there's all kinds of stories about crisis pregnancy and complicated pregnancy. I am a mother of three children myself, and I never would want to be in the position to have to make that choice. But we have to trust women, and we have to recognise that there are going to be very harsh decisions being made. Despite the comments from the males in the chamber, I would really doubt that any woman would take the decision lightly to terminate a pregnancy for whatever reason. And unfortunately, the males will never actually be in that position to have to make the choice to do it. We need to trust women. If you look at the case of Sarah Europe this week, that lady knew that her baby was never going to survive. Yet she had to carry that baby against her wishes and had to get on a plane and go over to England. I mean, that is just not acceptable. It's not right that we're sending our women away without providing proper health care. I look at the case of Savita, where she lost her life, even though they knew that the baby wasn't going to survive. You know, these are complicated stories, and it's a complicated issue.
Thanks very much. We voted in favour of the amendment anyway, so it's on the next one.
Chairman, I'm presuming that this Sinn Féin could become a substantive motion now.
Yeah, that's right.
Chairman, with had a long debate on this, a lot of discussion, and I'm pretty thoughtful for most people. But I just think it's a bit ironic whenever Sinn Féin regard slapping a child or not being able to slap a child as more important of protecting babies in the womb. It just shows how decrepit their politics actually is.
Sure. To say I'm disappointed tonight is a bit of an understatement. I think that the amendment put forward by the SDLP tried in some long way to encompass the depth, the wide breadth of feeling that there is on this issue. The fact that we were split 14-14 on this tonight and had to go to the vote of the chair to carry an amendment tells me just how deeply divided people can be in this issue. I believe that the motion that I seconded tonight originally would have given an opportunity for us to send a positive message out here that this council is compassionate, not only for those women in harrowing circumstances, but also for those who have no voice, the unborn. That said, I accept democracy. I'm not happy with the result of this meeting tonight. I believe that more consideration should have been given to the initial motion that was put forward. I would say as well, as somebody who has total respect for the fact that a man will never carry a child and will never go through what a woman goes through. I was a fair bit of along the way as a father of three children, and I was with my wife every step of the way during the traumatic experience that we had, and I felt every minute of her pain and every minute of my child's pain during that period of time. So I can say that in some cases, and not all cases, fathers feel as well. And as a father of a child that went through and came out the other end, I believe that I was being open and honest with our members tonight about how I felt and trying to get them to see that there's two sides of this coin and there is potentially emotion that could have come from here. But at the end of the day, the fact that we're actually debating this tonight is down to a failure of our politics, down to a failure of the fact that the two big parties in this chamber, and they all have different views on this, but the two big parties in this chamber feel it's more important to argue about Irish language and to argue about issues about band parades and everything else than it is to consider what a woman in a harrowing experience is going through in relation to a crisis pregnancy or the life of an unborn child. And, you know, we have work to do on the legislation. The very fact that that amendment was taken removed the element of putting pressure on Westminster through the Secretary of State to allow the Assembly to finish its work if we ever got it back together. But there's been a cop-out on two fronts here tonight, a cop-out in relation to getting the Assembly back to deal with it and to, what was the term used? British calls for the repeal of British legislation. Which criminalises women who have an abortion to be repealed immediately. British legislation, that's effectively what happened because there's MPs sitting across the chamber here, members of parties and MPs, will never ever get a chance to vote on that because they won't take their seats. So you don't take your seats. Hang on a minute. I didn't interrupt any of you. Okay. The bottom line is if you're going to call for something, go and do something about it. That's the point I'm making. It's a complete contradiction in terms, and that you won't live up to your expectations and go in and you could solve the problem in the morning and legislate within the next 3 weeks to prevent this from happening. But what effectively you've done, you've sat in the sidelines as of others and allowed this to happen. And some people never forgive you for it.
What happened to your MP for taking the seat?
Pardon?
What happened to your MP?
Henry, do you want to sum up? Henry.
Right.
Chairman, just to read out the amended motion, just as it stands.
So you maybe read it and get the seat, Chair.
That this council expresses its deep concern at the decision by Westminster to effectively extend the 1967 Abortion Act to Northern Ireland against the wishes of the people of Northern Ireland and their elected representatives, notes the sensitivity and complexity of this issue, acknowledges the need for sensitive consideration that deals with difficult cases, This council regrets that the Assembly is not in place to provide modern health care for women, including terminations where a woman's life, health or mental health is at risk, and in cases of fatal abnormality and sexual crime. Council recognises that it is not possible to legislate for abortion in the case of rape in a compassionate way. Council accepts that termination without specific indication should be available for a limited gestational period through a GP-led service in a clinical context. Council also calls for British legislation which criminalises women who have an abortion to be repealed immediately.
Let's move to the recorded vote then, Chairman.
Councillor Andrews is absent. Councillor Brown? Absent. Councillor Burgess is absent. Councillor Byrne? Yes. Councillor Casey?
For.
Councillor Clark?
For.
Councillor Kern? Yes. Councillor Devlin is absent. Councillor Doran?
For.
Councillor Enright is absent. Councillor Gallagher is absent. Councillor Gibbon? Yes. Councillor Hanlon? Councillor Hannah?
Yes.
Councillor Hart is absent. Councillor Hardy? Councillor Hoyle? Councillor Kimmins is absent. Councillor Larkin is absent. Councillor Lewis is absent. Councillor McGuinness? Councillor Malone?
Yes.
Councillor Mason? Councillor McAteer?
Yes.
Councillor McAvoy? Councillor McKee?
Yes.
Councillor McKevitt? Councillor McMurray?
Yes.
Councillor Mulgrew is absent. Councillor O'Hare?
Yes.
Councillor Murray?
Yes.
Councillor Riley?
Yes.
Councillor Owen? Councillor Savage? Councillor Sharvin is absent. Councillor Stoke?
Yes.
Councillor Taylor?
Yes.
Councillor Tinley is absent. Councillor Trainer?
Yes.
Councillor Walker is absent. 13 for and 13 again.
For.
That's carried with the chairman's casting vote.
Okay, next.
Right, ACM charges. Councillor Ian McGuinness.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. I'll just read out the motion first. Neri Moran and Down Council are recognising the growing concerns in relation to ATM charges and the financial difficulties these charges cause, particularly to our most vulnerable citizens. Contact the Financial Secretary to the Treasury, asking that he look at this issue and introduce measures to reduce or remove these charges for the benefit of customers and shop owners. In the present economic climate in particular, banks and billing societies should be providing ATMs as a service to customers and not as another source of income. Over recent years, these financial institutions, in order to reduce overhead, closed a large number of branches, leaving many areas without walk-in services. These services were replaced by ATMs. As independent cash machine providers entered the marketplace, brand name bank machines began to disappear. Some of these operators charge from 95 pence up to £2 per transaction. With most wages, pension and benefits now being paid into banks, these charges are an extra burden on people on fixed and low incomes. In the absence of walk-in bank services, people have no option but to use ATMs, thereby incurring extra expense through these charges. The imposition of charges for cash machines hits families on low income and elderly people in particular. On a daily basis, concerns are being expressed for residents who are financially disadvantaged, face isolation and social exclusion. Such charges particularly hit the elderly and people on low incomes and also encourage people to withdraw larger sums in one go that impact adversely on budgeting. I view these charges as unwarranted and socially irresponsible. In many areas, particularly in rural communities, these ATMs are the only ones available, and shops provide an important service to local people by providing them with access to their cash. A number of shop owners have raised concerns around charges for ATM cash machines in their shops, which they say is having a negative impact on their businesses. Measures have been introduced to reduce the fees associated with ATMs for banks, but this has led to charges being passed on to the customer, resulting in a downturn in use. Sinn Féin some time back had written to the then British Government Minister Mel Stride, Financial Secretary to the Treasury, asking him to look at this issue and introduce measures to reduce or remove these charges for the benefit of customers and shop owners. So far, we have had no response. I understand that Link has issued a statement today with regards to this issue, and it is very welcome news that they are proposing that all rural areas should have at least one free-to-use ATM in the vicinity. However, we as elected representatives of these rural areas need to keep the pressure on to make sure these are not just empty promises. Therefore, I am requesting that this council also registers its objections to these charges by backing this motion to abolish charges on all former free-to-use ATMs. Thank you.
Somebody second that motion?
Yeah, Chair.
At the late on. Oh, sorry, Darcy.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Una, for taking that very appropriate motion. I'd be delighted to second it. And end of just at one small minor amendment, we hope you'll consider taking it on board. I again am reflective and very concerned in the recent moves to introduce charging by stealth. And when I say stealth, I'm talking about machines that actually have signs above them saying free withdrawal, and when people start to use them, then they're surreptitiously charged 95p at least, or maybe more, 150. As we gradually start moving towards a cashless society, these companies are not just satisfied with the benefit of not having to employ people to actually handle cash, but it seems they don't want to punish people who still require and need cash on occasions. This move to charging will disadvantage some areas. One example locally, I just spotted actually a day or two ago locally, was in Strever, where the on-street bank in Strever were charging 95p for handling, but yet in Warren Pine, a couple of miles down the road, all the street machines were actually free. So that's disadvantaging one small village over a slightly bigger town. So I would ask that you accept an amendment adding to the letter to the Financial Secretary and the Treasurer that a regulator is appointed to monitor in a fair way this particular facet of banking. And I'm thinking in terms when a regulator would be appointed, then they would be obliged to rule proof the whole scenario. So, thank you, Chair. Accept that, Una?
Yeah, Charlie, I'll accept that amendment, yeah.
Anybody else bring on? No? Just want to sum up then, Una?
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Stefan for seconding that motion. It's a big issue at the minute. It's on the radio every morning. People are complaining about these ATM charges. They just seem there's very few free ATMs at the minute, so it's in the public domain. So I just thought I'd bring it to council. So thank you.
Are you all in agreement with LVR, yes? What about the next one, Jarlis, not here, Memory Gardens?
No, Chairman, we've just got the agreement to defer it to the committee. It's going to be referred to committee, so we'll just have text draft, so I'm going to put it on the Neighbourhood Services Committee for discussion.
The last one I have here is proposed to develop a gold mine, which will be heard in discussion. Terry Hartley.
Hi. Thank you, Chair, and I'll just read the motion as it is, that this council opposes plans to develop a gold mine and carry out prospecting in the Sligullion BEA and indeed across the wider council area. As such, we believe that it should be written into the local development plan. Furthermore, given the serious health and environmental risks involved, this council is opposed to the use of cyanide for mining purposes, which also convention to the European Parliament resolution of the 27th of April 2017 and the implementation of the Mine and Waste Directive. And Chair, at this stage, I just will give you a few bullet points as to why the plans simply present too many risks to the people in the area. The biggest draw the area has for visitors is our unspoiled countryside, our area of stunning natural beauty and an area of special scientific interest. We're deeply uncomfortable with the idea of allowing prospecting or gold mining, which can be highly destructive to the land, the water and the wildlife, to take place in the Ring of Gullion. We've also seen the troubles which such prospecting has caused in other parts of Ireland, and I'm unconvinced by the claims by the prospecting companies that it won't be using dangerous chemicals such as cyanide or any other dangerous chemicals. In recent months, we've seen millions of people all over the world protesting for actions on the environment and climate change. Many of these protests are being organised and led by young people who are clearly deeply concerned about the world that they're going to inherit. What kind of a message does it send to them and indeed our own children if we allow these companies to start digging out the very heart of South Armagh or drilling into their future? Whatever gold may
or may not be down there, it's not more valuable than our landscape, our environment, or certainly our young people. And I just ask people to support the motion.
Yeah, Chair, happy to second Terry's motion. Just a few notes here. In August at a public meeting in Silverbridge, we heard how the Save Our Skerns campaign was galvanised by a feeling within the community that their land was much too precious than to be sold off and mined by international mining and prospecting groups. At that meeting, I myself, along with Councillors McGuinness, Hardy and Byrne, made a promise that we would raise this issue in the form of a motion that we have here tonight and explore all the ways that we could possibly ban the practice of gold mining and prospecting, not simply for the good of it, but to protect and cherish the land that we all live on, and that it may be left in the same condition as we got it. Other councils, namely Derry and Strabane and Mid Ulster, have threatened legal action against DfE for granting prospecting licences in their council areas. When you think of the visuals of the open cast mine in Clontibert, the sinkhole in Maher Clune GFC in County Monaghan, after the mining pillars collapsed and pulled with it half the football field and half the football club, strong message was sent out in Silverbridge to all of us councillors that South Armagh was to say no to mineral prospecting. And I don't think it's enough. I think we need to agree that this district is going to say no to this, because while it was Steve Gullion that night, it'll be Donard, it'll be the Mourns, it'll be someone else's area next year or the year after that there. And thank Terry for taking this motion. Pete?
Yeah, thanks, Sherry. I'll be very, very brief. I'm going to cover the same points that Barra and Terry have covered. Barra's right, the three Sinn Féin councillors and myself were at the meeting in Silverbridge, and the information came out of that meeting, the anger from the people actually in that meeting was palpable. I suppose the one thing is that there was objections put forward back in, I think it was 2016, to the Department for Economy, and it fell on deaf ears, and I think the whole consultation period isn't transparent, and it didn't have the proper scrutiny, you know, because you don't have the structures up and going. So I don't have the assurances that this is the assurances for the extraction of gold, what it'll do to the environment, community groups and that. So if I don't have them, you know, as a public rep, and there's no way I can support this. I think that the issuing of a prospecting license to Conrad Gold has to be questioned. This then will then morph into a mining license, which is out of the power of this council. It's got nothing to do with the power of this council, and it will be signed off by a permanent secretary, which causes great concern. The Ring of Gullion is protected by the EU nature laws. It's designated as a special area of conservation. We can't put our number one priority as tourism in this district. We can't talk about, you know, developing Steve Gullion Park as a huge tourism asset and then agree to the mining of our area for gold. One of the speakers on the night in Silverridge said there was enough gold right across the world if you didn't mine any more for the next 170 years if we reused what we have. And you can see the public outrage over the last couple of weeks, months and years, and I suppose brought to a head by Greta Thunberg sailing across the world and all the marches. You know, the people coming behind us, the generation behind us, are waking up to this. They're saying that their environment is more important than the profits of these big companies. So I think, you know, Barra's right, and I said it on the night as well, and Terry's right to put it in the motion. We need to not only say that we're against this and Steve Gullion in our area and not be parochial, we need to write this into our local development plan to say as a district it's something that we won't put up with. So I'm happy to support fully the motion brought by Councillor Terry Herty and congratulations for bringing it.
That's it, Pete. Terry, you want to sum up? Oh, sorry.
Sorry, no, just not being from the eye, I'm not across the issue as same as everyone else, but certainly I'm happy to support and voice my concerns about the mining for gold in the district. So thank you, Chair.
No, Chair, I just want to thank everyone for supporting the motion. It's a very important issue for us at this minute, and I hope we'll all work together as a council to make sure that it never happens within this council area. Thank you.
We all agree? Yeah. Sinead? Thank you.